Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Remember, we change tomorrow by changing today, and we have to, because tomorrow really matters. So tell a friend, and you can stay tuned now for the Peter B. Collins Show that's coming up after the CBS News. Have a great long weekend on Monday on Tomorrow Matters. It's the best.
The program you have just enjoyed is a previously recorded broadcast.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. The Supreme Court ruled on a capital punishment case out of Louisiana that execution for the brutal rape of a child who survived the ordeal goes too far. Unless the victim dies, there's no execution. On the campaign trail, Democrat Barack Obama weighs in on that.
I disagree with this decision. I have said repeatedly that the death penalty should be applied in very narrow circumstances for the most egregious of crimes.
Republican John McCain has not yet given an opinion on the decision. The Supreme Court has put an end to the imagination as their guide jury awards as punishment for corporate wrongs, mistakes, and oversights. The Exxon Valdez oil spill punitive damage award was reduced to equal the actual damages today.
The court not only slashed Exxon's punishment by at least $2 billion, it created a formula that will limit future awards and make them more predictable.
This is a very big win for the business community.
Chamber of Commerce lawyer Amar Sarwal.
The court did show that it understands our concerns about the lack of predictability, lack of fairness.
Barry Bagnetto, CBS News, Washington.
The missing hikers have been found. 11 people, 9 teenagers, 2 adults who had gone missing in the Sierra Nevada mountains are reported to be okay. This just in to CBS News. The group had gone missing during an outward bound expedition but failed to make a rendezvous with one of the guides who had gone ahead to scout out a mountain for climbing. Outward Bound says the group hiked out safely to a store in a remote area of Fresno County. Big sigh of relief as the sheriff's department had helicopters and volunteers and people with dogs and on horseback out looking for them. Money will remain cheap if you're a bank for the next couple of months at least. The Federal Reserve left the federal funds rate at 2%, though analysts like Stuart Hoffman at PNC say the Fed is expected to raise interest rates in September.
They basically said the rate cutting campaign is over, and the reason, in a word, is inflation.
The states of California and Illinois are suing Countrywide Financial, accusing the company of duping people into borrowing money to buy more house than they could afford and tricking them with fine print the customers didn't read. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan.
Much of this comes from Countrywide's greed and their desire to dominate the marketplace. Unfortunately, this came at a very steep price to Illinois homeowners.
The lawsuits also come as Countrywide shareholders approved sale of the company to Bank of America. $1 million may still be elusive to you and me, but there are 10 million millionaires in the world now. Combined, that thin air group's worth nearly $41 trillion. Ileana Vanderlinde at Capgemini makes the list with Merrill Lynch each year.
While we had incredible growth in the last year in India, China, and Brazil, we do know that the U.S. still holds the largest group of millionaires.
Wall Street, the Dow up 40, or up 4, the NASDAQ up 33. This is CBS News.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger than life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
I have high cholesterol. Now I'm eating well and staying active. Guess what? Walmart is doing their part to lower my numbers, too. I can get up to a 3-month supply of my prescription for just $10. So instead of spending more time picking up my medicine, I spend more time picking up my grandkids.
Hi, Grandma.
The Walmart Pharmacy Prescription Program includes hundreds of popular medicines. A 90-day supply of prescription drugs is now $10. A month supply is still $4. Save money. Live better. Walmart. Restrictions apply. See walmart.com or your pharmacist for details.
So much water in the Mississippi, the river's still moving upward in northern Missouri.
The small town of Winfield will have to wait for the crest of the Mississippi, now predicted to be almost 3 days away and higher than expected.
We're doing everything we can to protect life and property, but Mother Nature is not cooperating with us.
Emergency spokesman Andy Binder says they're constantly plugging holes and stopping slides on a weakened levee, and now they've run out of sand for sandbags. They'll use the next couple of days to replenish supplies.
And then Saturday morning, we're going to hit it, and we're going to hit it hard.
The levee is the last line of defense for nearly 100 homes. Cammie McCormick, CBS News, Winfield, Missouri.
Do laws against methamphetamines drive up the use of cocaine? Maybe. A three-state study led by researchers in Arkansas suggested. Meth users who participated in the study may or may not have been switching drugs, but cocaine use went up 9% in counties where they got tough on meth. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Ace Hardware is opening new stores nationwide, so we're celebrating with a national grand opening sale in your neighborhood and a store full of great weekend deals. Buy 9 items and get your money back after rebate. Buy 2 gallons of Ace Royal paint and get money back for 1 gallon by rebate. Don't miss this great chance to save. Friday through Sunday, only at Ace, the helpful place.
Price is good at participating Ace Hardware stores while supplies last. All rebates by mail. See store for details.
There's a reason you come to Sherwin-Williams. You just expect more from us. Better paint, better advice, a better way to realize your vision.
At your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store, we have exceptional products and unparalleled expertise because painting and decorating is all we do. And now save up to 20% on a wide variety of paints and stains. Stop in. You'll be amazed what happens when you ask. For a store near you, visit Sherwin-Williams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to a fresh edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. We've got a lot to talk about, and I'm glad you're here. Up first, we'll talk about some media issues with Eric Bullard from MediaMatters.org. Later this hour, Ray McGovern returns to our program. 27 years he spent at the Central Intelligence Agency. And he's issued another warning about Bush's intentions toward Iran. Also on today's program, writer Susan Mulcahy has published a book called Why I'm a Democrat, with 50 or 60 people who explain, well, they answer that question. And we're going to put it to her because I, of course, am not a Democrat. I am a declined a state independent voter. But I think it's really hard to be a Democrat after the cave-in on the FISA law. And the Democrats' continued funding for Bush's war in Iraq. Also next hour, California's Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi will be with us. We'll talk about the wildfires. Hundreds of them have burst out around the state. We'll also talk about the relief for many of us that the aerial spraying to combat the light brown apple moth has been suspended for populated areas. And if there's time, we'll talk about offshore drilling, prisons, the budget, and that kind of thing. Free speech zone. And we'll get an update from Chris Tonsing at the Middle East Report about an exit strategy from Iraq. There's a group that's been working on that, and there's some powerful information there. We'll share that with you during the free speech zone. That's our final hour today on the Peter B. Collins Show. As usual, you can dial in whenever the urge strikes you, and the First Amendment still is in effect. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, and you can always email me. That's peter@peterbcollins.com. Eric Bullard is one of those folks who monitors the media and then points out where they miss or go wrong. He's with MediaMatters.org. That's Media Matters for America. Eric, how are you doing today?
Hey, Peter. Good, and you?
I'm doing fine, and I wanted to announce for you and my listeners that I am effective today lifting the embargo on any critical comments of Tim Russert or the way that his passing was handled by NBC. I do, as a matter of taste, try to avoid criticism of the recently departed, but it's been a week since they buried him, and I think it's fair to step back and take a look. And I was really stunned by the extent to which NBC went to cover the passing of, obviously, one of their most important on-air talents. But it went way too far for me, and I had to actually flip off the tube when Chris Matthews started reciting the Hail Mary in honor of Tim Russert there live on television. It was like a big meeting of East Coast Catholics.
It was, and they, and a lot of them just openly, you know, they had Pat Buchanan on, and they had Mike Barnicle on, and they, you know, the Daily Howler, the great website, talked about last week. I mean, it was just sort of this powwow session for Irish Catholics. It was very sort of peculiar. I mean, Gene Lyons wrote a column in the Arkansas newspaper today or yesterday talking about the Russert funeral, and he referred to it as a royal funeral, which I think is a pretty good description if you take a step back. And, you know, I watching it, I could only really think of two other people that would have produced that kind of nonstop coverage, particularly on the NBC family, and that's the president and the Pope.
Yeah.
And I sort of wondered, well, how did the Sunday morning talk show host sort of sneak in as the number three there?
Well, and I was uncomfortable the night before his funeral. They were live from the wake at the funeral home, and that was so intrusive. I felt really bad for the widow and the son that the camera was there invading their privacy at such a difficult moment.
Yeah, and I really, thank goodness, the family did not allow, you know, the funeral itself. You know, they broadcast from outside the wake. They broadcast from the Kennedy Center in Washington, where there was a remembrance. I think it was the same day, later in the day, from the funeral. I'm pretty sure if they could have, MSNBC would have covered that funeral live.
Yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it does. You just do sort of step back and you think, it certainly raises questions about news judgment and how, you know, a major news organization could.
Well, and it certainly
decide that 40, 50, 60 hours was about right.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly was a surprise and a shock that he died so suddenly and at a relatively youthful age. And I do understand that, and you know, I think there were many people who had a high regard for him.
Right.
But at the same time, we do have this problem with funerals of this nature, where you really cannot permit any honest evaluation or criticism.
Yeah. It was very reminiscent of Ronald Reagan week.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, watching the Reagan stuff, you know, that really did go literally 8 days nonstop cable television. And I thought, you know, the first 2 days, 3 days, I thought, well, okay, there's sort of an embargo against sort of any critical commentary. But, you know, he obviously was a two-term president with an eight-year record and did lots of good things, and lots of people were very critical of him. But I just thought, my gosh, are we really going to go 7 days without any criticism of the former president? And it almost did.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was probably the sixth or seventh day of cable coverage that they sort of allowed, you know, a discussion of Iran-Contra.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, to me, that is bizarre. And I think there was a connection. There was a similarity, you know, I think with the Russert coverage, you know. You're not going to jump in that first couple days, and obviously Tim Russert was a target of criticism within the blogosphere, and then a lot of people were had problems with the things he did. But frankly, that wasn't the time or place to rehash all that old stuff, and I'm glad it wasn't. But I think other columnists have written, you know, Jack Schaefer at Slate and Bob Summerbee at the Daily Howler, it morphed into something else, and it wasn't just sort of paying respects. It really sort of became something else entirely, and something else that was rather unexpected, at least from my perspective.
And what was that?
Well, it was just sort of this canonization.
Mm-hmm.
And I think canonization is probably the best.
Yeah.
In the literal religious sense.
Yeah, they jammed him right ahead of Mother Teresa in the process.
it was just strange to watch, and you know, I think I counted something like 1,500 mentions of Russert on to MSNBC and NBC in that 1 week span,
mm-hmm.
and I think there was maybe a dozen mentions of Baghdad. So again, it sort of puts the coverage in perspective a little bit.
Well, and a lot of things were blacked out. For example, during that 1 week period, we had powerful testimony on Capitol Hill about the torture policy of the
president. Oh yeah. Well, I think that was going to get blacked out anyway.
Maybe you're right.
We've seen absolutely, no interest in particularly cable news or the networks to cover that. But you're right. I mean, if you're going to roadblock 20, 30, 40 hours, obviously some things aren't going to get covered.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you roadblock, you then have to ask the question, well, is this justified in terms of a news story?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing is, and I have no personal animosity toward Tim Russert in any way, but as a professional, I observed some of his skills, and he was often, I think, overrated. For example, you know, he's cast as this hard-hitting interrogator. And he had an interesting gotcha style where he'd get Dick Cheney there, and he'd pull out a clip from a previous Dick Cheney appearance, and he would show that Dick Cheney was in the process of contradicting himself. And then he'd move on to the next question, or he'd allow Cheney to fend it off with a non-answer, and then move on.
But then Russert would get credit for the great prosecutorial style.
Yeah. Yeah, and
but you're right, it did seem to didn't really lead to that much.
Yeah.
And I had to chuckle, you know, just hearing all the, you know, testimonies to him and how he was always so prepared for his interviews and, you know. And I was just thinking that people in sort of the middle America must be thinking, you know, okay, so if you're prepared for your job, that makes you, like, better than everyone else.
Special.
And I think most Americans try to be prepared for their jobs, but in the context of Russert and the interviews, it was certainly presented as some sort of startling development.
Here's Dave in Eureka. Welcome, Dave. You're on with Peter B. and Eric Bollert.
Well, Peter and Eric, my memory is that Tim Russert, of all people, was empowered to chair one of the presidential debates, and it came to where they allowed one question of my candidate and a lot of other people's candidate, I believe including you to some degree, Peter, Dennis Kucinich. And the one question that he asked him was, is it true that you saw a UFO?
Right.
And, you know, he could have died 1,000 deaths and wouldn't have merited 10 minutes of airtime as of that minute.
But well, and he had to invoke Shirley MacLaine as another way of undermining or marginalizing Dennis Kucinich. And in that same debate, he asked Mike Gravel about his bankruptcies.
Oh.
And I didn't think Mike handled it very well, but I also didn't think it was that terribly relevant. It was just a way to dispatch a minor candidate.
A good old boy.
Yeah. All right, Dave, thanks for pointing that out. I appreciate it, and I think your comment's on target. We're going to take a break and return with Eric Bollert and talk about getting the media off the stage at those debates. Also, some of the latest flaps regarding Don Imus, Rush Limbaugh, and the threat to Christian broadcasters. So I'll tell you about that. It's all straight ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale with 2 hours of talk radio all about our daily challenges, our fears, changes, crisis, addictions. Over 1,700 of them, can you believe it? Using the 12 steps, the law of attraction, whatever it takes. Join me Saturday afternoons 3 to 5 with my guests and we'll find solutions together. The Sheila Show, Saturday 3 to 5 on KRXA, brought to you by Benji's Princess Monterey Whale Watching Trips. Open daily on Old Fisherman's Wharf, Monterey.
Ever thought about shipping your child to a remote island? Want to send them to their room for the rest of their life? I can help. I'm Mark Lecluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Dr. Chaim Barton. For the past 10 years, I've been helping parents, teens, and kids overcome challenges in their lives, and I'd like to help you too. I can work with your family to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection. I offer an affordable sliding scale, and I'm currently accepting new clients. Please call for an appointment. 831-818-4033. Parenting doesn't have to be so hard. I'm Mark Lecluse. Give me a call. 818-4033. That's 818-4033.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Hey, are you driving around looking for a coffee shop with free internet? Right here in Pacific Grove, you'll find Black Forest Espresso, a fun and friendly place to hang out. We have a large espresso bar ready to make any gourmet drink, homemade wraps, mochas, lattes. How about 100% fruit smoothies and old-fashioned milkshakes with 14 flavors? Black Forest is also the only place to get soft-serve fat-free frozen yogurt. We're the last hometown coffee shop at the Country Club Gate Shopping Center at Forest and David next to Save Mart, Pacific Grove. Check out blackforestespresso.com.
We're talking with Eric Bollert. The website MediaMatters.org. If you've never been there, you got to drop by next time you're online. They do a great job of monitoring the corporate media and pointing out when they go astray. And it's complete with links and facts to help you establish for yourself what kind of prevarications may have taken place. Eric Bollert, Dave raised the question about Tim Russert's performance in a debate earlier this year. And you have a column up at MediaMatters.org regarding this proposed town hall meeting series with Obama and McCain. And so far, they're working hard to try to eliminate this network exclusive that we've seen as part of the presidential debates so far this year, and really open it up and not turn it into a promotion for the network of the week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we saw that certainly during the primary season where, you know, these became big ratings winners for MSNBC and CNN in particular, and, you know, they've built these huge spaceship-sized sets. It looked like it was something, you know, something from the Metropolitan Opera with all these walls of video TV banks. And we'd have the candidates, particularly when it came down to Clinton and Obama, they'd come out one by one like it was a boxing match and everyone would hoot and holler.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice if we could just sort of dispense with the cable networks and the network news altogether for the general election debate. There had been some talk about town hall forums, and ABC immediately jumped in and said, you know, offered to exclusively present the first one between Obama and McCain. And I was heartened within hours when both of the campaigns said no.
Good.
And specifically, if they did one, it was going to be open to all television formats. It wasn't going to be exclusive. And specifically, they did not want sort of a millionaire anchor being the moderator, because the point was to have a much more free-flowing, exchange, interaction with the voters. And it seemed to be, to me, they're really trying to tell the press, you know, to sort of get off the stage, that they're not the third candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to be observers, feel free. But hopefully the days in this election, when they're sort of going to be, you know, the onstage filter, hopefully it'll be coming to an end.
Well, and if real people ask real questions about things they care about, we'll get away from these gotcha questions about driver's licenses for illegals and, you know, who said what to whom.
Right.
Eric, I want to move on to another topic. I got a flaming email from Jay Sekulow, who is Pat Robertson's lawyer from the American Center for Law and Justice. And before the Washington recess for the 4th of July, they're trying to get 23 more signatures so they can force the Broadcaster Freedom Act out of committee and onto the floor of the House. And it reads here, it's got to happen, or every Christian organization on the air in America could be in jeopardy. And it says, Speaker Pelosi is bottlenecking the bill in committee because her liberal allies want to reinstate the old so-called fairness doctrine, forcing every Christian TV or radio program to include the opposing viewpoint or go off the air. How could we in good conscience broadcast a pro-abortion program or a program in support of same-sex marriage or promote terrorism? It's unimaginable. Now, does this square with any kind of reality that you know of? I mean, the fairness doctrine is not on the verge of being reenacted. This end run by Mike Pence and the others to block any effort to, you know, promote fairness in the media does look like it could pass. And I think this is just a fundraising appeal to, you know, try to get some schlubs to send money.
Yeah, I think the only thing that's accurate is that Nancy Pelosi did express her support of the fairness doctrine. That's a long way from becoming law, even if we do get a Democratic president. But it is fascinating to me this how the sort of fairness doctrine has become this kryptonite that Republicans and conservative broadcasters sort of live in dread of and fear of. Even if you mention it, the fairness doctrine was never a stopwatch where if you said 40 minutes of something conservative, you had to say sort of 40 minutes of something liberal. That's sort of the boogeyman perception that they try to build, that Uncle Sam's going to have a stopwatch listening in on all these radio programs, and whoever doesn't, you know, split it 50-50 is going to be kicked off the air. It was a much more general rule that if you do policy and opinion programming, you don't devote 282 hours a month to conservative and 14 to liberal. Specifically, if you debate an issue, at some point you have someone else from an opposing view join that conversation. I think it would be great if it was brought back. I think politically it's going to be very difficult, but it is fascinating how conservatives are absolutely... This really is the apocalypse for them.
Well, and I'd love to find some of that.
Even discuss it.
I'd love to find some of that liberal media that they fear so much and attack so often. Eric, just about 40 seconds here. What do you make of the latest Don Imus flap?
Well, it's interesting. Media Matters was certainly on top of the one when he got in trouble with the Rutgers college basketball women. We didn't post it immediately because we thought there was a sort of a gray area, and we always give people the benefit of the doubt. But we did post something today where Don Imus' co-host, Warner Wolf, went on local media or ESPN, I think, and gave a sort of a much different interpretation of Don Imus. So I think that does raise a serious question as to what Imus was talking about when he was asking, what color is this pro football player who got arrested? To us, that is interesting. We didn't jump on the first one because it did seem sort of his explanation was plausible. Mm-hmm. And again, I think it just shows the media matters always side on the side of caution. We're just not out there trying to, you know.
Eric Bollert, MediaMatters.org. Thank you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored by Walgreens, the pharmacy America has trusted since 1901, and by Visa. Visa Business knows there's nothing small about small business. This is Dave Ross. I've been waiting for the day when the CDC issues some health statistics that will finally make us feel good about ourselves. And today is not going to be that day. All the more reason to pay close attention after this from Charlie.
Thank you, Dave. Why fill your prescriptions at different pharmacies when you could get the convenience and peace of mind that comes with filling them all at Walgreens? Walgreens has thousands of pharmacies nationwide, and they're all connected, so you can pick up a refill at any one of them. Plus, they screen for interactions with prescriptions you've filled at any Walgreens, as well as anything else you tell them about. To take advantage of great services like these, transfer your prescriptions to Walgreens. Just show them your prescription bottles, and they'll take care of everything else.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world, and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
From the CDC comes the latest statistics on diabetes, and actually there is a little good news.
The number of people who have undiagnosed diabetes is declining. Used to be about a third of the people with diabetes didn't know they have the disease, and now we're at about a quarter.
But the number of cases overall is still growing. 3 million more cases of diabetes in the past 2 years, which brings the total close to 24 million, most of it type 2, the type associated with obesity. And another 57 million have pre-diabetes, which means that without a better diet and more exercise, they're likely to get the full-blown version. It's not happening everywhere. If you look at the CDC's diabetes map, the cases are concentrated in a belt from Mississippi extending north into West Virginia, and it affects some racial groups more than others.
Hispanic, Latino, African American, American Indian, Asian and Pacific Island populations. Those populations, many of them, are increasing in number.
The highest rate is among Native Americans at 16.5%. Lowest rate is among whites at less than half that. And obesity still seems to be the biggest factor. Last year, the CDC reported that obesity remains stable, but it still stands at 34% for adults 20 and older, which means 72 million obese people.
We still have a long way to go in helping people prevent diabetes. That's one of the very concerning things about this, is that we are very concerned of the number of new cases of diabetes that we're seeing.
Dr. Ann Albright of the CDC. It's the same story. Got to eat less food, get more exercise. And hey, with corn at $8 a bushel and gas at $4.50 a gallon, you may have no choice. The Osgood File, Dave Ross, on the CBS Radio Network.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
Installing new transmitter, 50,000 cool ones. Operating the finest talk radio station west of the Gavilan Mountains. Priceless.
KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show. Weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Will Bush do it?
Bomb, 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 bomberang.
Bomb, 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 bomberang.
Bomberang.
lots of my listeners hate this song. Producer Katrina Rill really detests it. But she's away on vacation, so I can sneak it in. And the only thing that's more offensive than this song was when John McCain, at a news conference, a political appearance earlier this year, while he had a cold, tried to kind of sing it and make a joke out of it. And I just thought of something even more offensive. Bush might actually do it. Adam Contras is the artist who put that song together. I don't know who Adam is, but it arrived in my email one day, and thank you, Adam. Ray McGovern returns to our program today. 27 years he served at the Central Intelligence Agency, was the daily briefer for Ronald Reagan for part of his service in the 1980s. He is a co-founder of VIPS, Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Ray McGovern, welcome back to our program today.
Glad to be with you, Peter B.
Well, it's good to talk with you, and this is on the heels of another warning from Scott Ritter, the former UN weapons inspector, that the die seems to be cast, the plans seem to be drawing up, or being drawn up, for a military assault on Iran. And some of the details certainly will not be clear until such an event takes place. But there's clear agreement between the Prime Minister of Israel, Ehud Olmert, and President Bush and Vice President Cheney on some secret plan to proceed. And you published a piece that was put up at Raw Story just a couple of days ago called Bomb Iran, What's to Stop Us? Now, what's your current take on the threat that we're facing and the threat that our president will launch another unilateral attack?
Well, Peter B., one of the reasons I wrote that article was a statement by Olmert that escaped attention in the Western press. After he met with Bush on the 4th of June, he met with reporters, and this is what he said. He said, "We've reached agreement, that is, Bush and I, on the need to take care of the Iranian threat. I, Olmert," this is a quote, "left with a lot less question marks than I had entered with regard to the means, the timetable, the restrictions, and American resoluteness to deal with the problem. George Bush understands the severity of the Iranian threat and the need to vanquish it, and intends to act on that matter before the end of his term in the White House, period," end quote. Now, let me divulge a trade secret here that we intelligence analysts usually don't let people know about, but people think about it, satellite photography, think about intercepted messages and so forth. That must be the meat. That must be the real, the take that the intelligence analysts pore over. Well, a statement like this is worth 1,800 satellite photographs. It's worth 1,600 intercepted messages. Here is the Prime Minister of Israel saying that George Bush has promised me that he's going to, quote, take care of Iraq before the end of his term in the White House. Now, I ask you, Peter B., does that sound like a man who's concerned that Bush is just a bunch of bluff and bluster? Or does that sound like a man who's been promised, or to whom renewed promises have been made, that Bush is going to take care of Iraq in close coordination with the Israelis?
That's Iran, Ray.
Iran.
Got that cue in there. Yes.
Easy to get them mixed up.
Well, and this term vanquish, I mean, this reminds me of what I thought was some of the most reckless language from presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. When asked about a possible nuclear attack from Iran to a Middle Eastern nation, she said, well, we would obliterate them.
Yeah.
And, you know, this kind of language, I think, is something like you just pointed out. This is human intelligence coming from a very well-placed source, and we have to pay close attention to it. Now, in the ensuing weeks, Ray McGovern, we have seen some Israeli military maneuvers where the media described them as similar to the requirements in terms of distance and degree of difficulty in launching an aerial assault on certain sites in Iran. And so one of the questions that arises here is there kind of a bluff game going on where we are signaling Tehran that there will be an assault and kind of trying to keep them in the dark on whether it would be Israel, the United States, or both?
Well, I think it's something akin to that, Peter B. I think what the Israelis and, of course, the U.S. propaganda machine, and bear in mind, it was Michael Gordon, whom I call, aluminum tubes Gordon from the Iraqi business. He's a fellow that gets on the front page of the New York Times to regurgitate what the administration sources tell him. It was he who interpreted this this very very large air exercise, as a warning to Israel and so forth. What they're trying to do is get us accustomed to sort of thinking, well, okay, it's pretty much inevitable it's going to happen. And what boggles my mind, Peter B., is that people now sort of say, okay, well, we might, just like the Israelis struck that facility in Syria last September, it looks like we're going to strike Iran, and, the debate is really, well, you think it'll be before the election or maybe after the election? Nobody has their head screwed on right, Peter. This is a major, major act, and it's only the uniformed military, first and foremost Admiral Fallon, who's gone now, that have told the president, look, we do not have what they call escalation dominance. In other words, once we start attacking Iran, we are more of a disadvantage in that area than Iran will ever be. We have much more to lose, and the thing could escalate way out of our ability to control it. So this all has a sort of surreal air to it, It's okay to do acts of war now. If Israel wants to bomb a place in Syria, they do it, and then we explain it, Did anybody see anything odd about that, that the United States was explaining why they did it and not Israel?
Well, now, Ray, I still have many questions about the September 7 attack on that facility in Syria, because it's been widely reported without any proof that that was a nuclear facility and that North Korea was supplying them with plans and designs and that sort of thing. But we've seen no indication of any kind of a radioactive a footprint or measurement from there. And, I this was delivered to the U.S. media with a trust me line saying, that was a nuclear facility. And there has been no proof offered of that, at least not for public consumption.
Yeah, it smells to high heaven, actually. We do not have the full story on that. What we do know is, number one, it's an act of war, and Scott Ritter has been particularly strong on that. Number two, what should have happened here under international agreements is that Israel should have shared whatever information it had with the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, and asked them to go to investigate. The IAEA would have every prerogative to go into Syria and to look at what was going on there. Instead of that, boom, blam, blasted out there. The general, my best guess is that the Israelis just wanted to remind us, remind the whole world, and especially Iran, that, they did this to Iraq back in 1981 when they knocked out that fledgling reactor at Osirak. We did it in Syria in September 2007, and we can do it to you too, and nobody seems to be very much objecting. Not even people who would be directly affected, like the Russians and the Europeans. So it's all very bizarre. It's almost like, Bush is a little crazy, and he got 6 more months. Looks like he might. Will he do it before the election or after the election? It's really, really bizarre. No one seems to realize what a catastrophe this would be, not only for our armed forces in the area, but for the whole economic system that exists today in the whole world.
Well, we'll come back to impacts in a moment, but I want to talk about the flags that were flown over Washington this week as some Democrats joined Republicans in calling for a House resolution that includes language suggesting a naval blockade of Iran. And this is a kind of escalation in the saber rattling that gets it beyond the White House and over to Capitol Hill. And, Ray, this is where we've got to talk about AIPAC, because the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee has incredible pull in Washington on both sides of the aisle. And it does appear to me that together with the Olmert government in Israel, they are busy trying to lock up support for this misguided idea, and they want to do it before Bush leaves office.
Well, that's clear. AIPAC was in town 4 weeks ago. It was a big affair. Everyone who is anyone spoke there. And even before that, Peter B., people don't realize this, but the original idea of a blockade came from Olmert, the Israeli prime minister, about 2 months ago. And so, we have, I guess I have to say first and foremost that I'm very, very concerned with respect to the security of the state of Israel, because I see them being led by people who are really extremists and who do not entertain the possibility of working out differences in a negotiation kind of process. What we have here is a very myopic approach. If the Israeli leaders really believe that starting a war with Iran is going to make them more secure in the long run or even in the medium run, they have so sadly misled that I really fear for the future of Israel, because this would be, in my view, a terrific setback far in excess of what they suffered just 2 years ago when they decided to go after the Hezbollah and now Lebanon and destroyed so much of that country's infrastructure.
Well, and Ray, you read my mind there. I was just about to raise that, because the conflict with Hezbollah in the summer of 2006 showed two critical things. One is that air power is not sufficient to subdue a guerrilla-type enemy. And number two, that Israel's aura of invincibility suffered a huge, huge setback because it was essentially a draw against this, group of soldiers, and they're barely an army. They really are. It's a militia with a few rockets and some mortars.
Well, left a much stronger Peter B. And there's a classic example of a missed opportunity, because Lebanon finally, after civil war since the mid 70s, finally was on the path back to a multi-confessional, power-sharing state of the kind that we knew back then. The commercial center of the Middle East. It was getting back on its feet. And instead of that developing, this Israeli attack 2 years ago set that process back. And instead of having that kind of relatively benign state on its border, the Israeli attack guaranteed that Hezbollah would be the most powerful force in Lebanon, which it is, of course, now, and that that whole prospect of having a more peaceful neighbor evaporated into thin air. Why? Because the Israelis thought they could do it, and they can't do it. And that's what I'm talking about, very myopic policy, and I really am concerned as to what this will mean for the eventual security of Israel.
And Ray, to return to your point a moment ago about the true impact of this, Americans seem really blasé about it, as if this is just a video game where, we can launch a massive aerial assault on Iran, and then nothing will really happen to us. We just hit reset and launch the next game. And I'm very concerned, because we're already economically on our knees. We're overextended militarily. And we really can't predict what strings Iran could pull to respond to us if we launch such an attack.
Yes, Peter B., the what I always refer to as the sea change in Washington in the 45 years I've been here, is the most operative element here. We no longer have, in any real sense, a free media. The American people are kept in the dark. They are told, for example, that Iran has threatened to drive Israel into the sea. The president, vice president, keep talking about Ahmadinejad threatening to destroy Israel. These are the big lies. He said some nasty things, but what he said, what they keep quoting him about, was what he said was that the regime occupying Jerusalem should pass from the pages of time. He was quoting Khomeini. Okay, mm-hmm. Now that's not a nice thing to say, but it's a far cry from driving Israel into the sea
or wiping them off the map. Common mistranslation of his remarks. Ray, we're going to take a break and return, and when we come back, I want to talk about the weak posture of the Democrats and this threat from John Conyers to impeach Bush after he attacks Iran. We'll continue in a moment with Ray McGovern. Read his article, Bomb Iran, What's to Stop Us, at rawstory.com. And we can take your phone calls, too. If you have a comment, join me toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. Thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hi, I'm John.
And I'm John.
And we're from All Class Transportation, where we take you to your special event in style, comfort, and safety. All Class Transportation is a truly professional local luxury transportation company with over 25 years of combined managerial service, an efficient, proactive staff, trained, certified chauffeurs, and a fleet of well-maintained luxury vehicles. We are well-suited to meet and exceed your specific needs.
All Class Transportation specializes in personalized luxury transportation, including company parties, corporate events, weddings, quinceañeras, whatever your needs, call All Class Transportation at 831-582-9338. That's 582-9338. Want to know about our rates? At All Class Transportation, our service and rates are second to none, period. We are All Class Transportation, TCP 22978A. Call us at 831-582-9338. That's 582-9338.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Sing it out, CeeLo. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
And when you're out there, without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
So Bushko wants to attack Iran. Are they crazy? In a word, yes. Ray McGovern with us, former CIA officer, founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Read his article, Bomb Iran, What's to Stop Us, at rawstory.com. And, Ray, in the article you wrote, you mention the posture of the Democrats, and you single out John Conyers, chair of the House Judiciary Committee. And Conyers has collaborated with Speaker Pelosi in, quote-unquote, keeping impeachment of Bush and Cheney off the table. But he has said that if Bush launched a military assault on Iran, he would seek to impeach him. And I find this thinking bizarre. And I support Dennis Kucinich, who introduced 35 articles of impeachment. I think that they are all valid, and there are others that are equally valid. And yet the Democratic leadership poo-poos this. Even Russ Feingold, in talking about his anger over the FISA debacle, used the same language that there's no will to impeach and we just can't get anywhere with it. But I think it's that very, unilateral choice to disarm that has emboldened Bush and Cheney.
Well, I can only agree with you, Peter B. You know, I live here in Northern Virginia, just a stone's throw from where George Mason is buried. And I can hear him in the evening, turning over in his grave and saying, oh, my God, that hot Philadelphia summer when we put impeachment and the Constitution six times. We knew this was going to happen somewhere down the road. What in the world is wrong with these people? And, of course, what's wrong with them is they become completely politicized, and actually the subjects of blackmail. Let me explain. A lot of these articles of impeachment, the ones having to do with torture, for example, the ones having to do with illegal eavesdropping against the amendments to the Constitution and against the FISA law, they were approved. They were approved by Nancy Pelosi and by several other of the leading Democrats. And so they don't want this wash to come out. They want to keep it hidden, besides their campaign advisors saying, look, don't do anything that Fox News can make out to be divisive here. Now, all you need to do is cruise along here, and you're going to win really big in November.
Isn't that an ugly calculation?
Well, she said that. She said that, actually, even before the election, the midterms. We were really smart to keep this off the table because, we wouldn't. Now, that means the heck with the Constitution, right? And that's why my friend George Mason and James Madison, who was a little further down or lived, they're tearing their hair out because this means a lot more than just this particular president. The precedent set here is incredible. Mm-hmm. And, Peter B., the ironies of history really strike one in this kind of regard because John Conyers was way out in front in 1974 in helping initiate impeachment proceedings and vote out three articles of impeachment on Richard Nixon.
Yep.
And, after it was all over, he said this, and this is a quote, "This impeachment inquiry was forced on us by an accumulation of disclosures which finally and after unnecessary delays could no longer be ignored. Impeachment is difficult and it is painful, but the courage to do what must be done is the price of remaining free." Well, if he could say that in 1974, with three relatively minor articles of impeachment against Nixon, look at those 35. You have looked at them. Encourage your listeners to look at the 35 that Kucinich stood up and read for 4 hours. Look at them. They all hold up. They all hold up.
Yes, they do.
And if we can't abide by the Constitution provision to, in an orderly way, get rid of people who think they're kings, then I think we're done for.
Let's talk to John in Carmel Valley. Go ahead, John.
Vincent Bugliosi was on Peter's program and sounded most determined of anyone I've heard to go after Bush on impeachment.
No, on murder charges.
Well, okay, murder charges, that's better still. Get together, please, with him. I'm begging you to get together with him, Admiral Fallon, Dennis Kucinich, all the people who know we've got to do something. And impeachment, I think, is the only thing that stands in the way of not only war with Iran, but all the other insanity that goes in this horrible package of craziness.
Thank you, John. And the Bugliosi book is interesting, Ray, if you have a chance to take a look.
I'm skimming through it, but I'm going to read it in more depth.
Here's Laird in Eureka. Go ahead, Laird.
Hi, Laird. Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Listen, in the event that either Israel or the United States were to attack Iran, and further in the event that George Bush were to use this as a reason to retain power, would either of you care to comment on the possibility of an armed insurrection by the American people?
All right, Ray, you got a take on that?
My take on that is the institutions that we have in being. And I like to think that as corrupted as the U.S. Army has become, that their leaders are not so far gone that they will allow themselves to be used to impose a martial law on a pretext, and that they would not cooperate with Cheney and Bush on this. I can't be sure. back on Iran, for example, and I think that they may remember their oath of office.
And, Laird, I think it would take canceling the NFL season for insurrection. Thank you very much, Ray.
We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter Beast.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
At the Supreme Court,
major rulings limit punitive damages and the death penalty.
This case really could go down as a turning point.
I'm Barry Bagnato in Washington.
At the FBI,
our efforts have led to the recovery of 433 child victims.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Jim Taylor. A couple of huge rulings from the Supreme Court today. Here's CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato.
With sweeping language, the High Court refuses to allow the death penalty for child rape. Demanding restraint, Justice Anthony Kennedy writes, when the law punishes by death, it risks its own sudden descent into brutality.
That is a new tone that we have not heard in well over 35 years.
Says death penalty foe David Bruck. The justices also are slashing a punitive damages award against Exxon for the massive 1989 Alaska oil spill. In both of these major rulings, the court goes well beyond the cases before them to lay out broad rules and punishment constraints. It's creating a specific formula for punitive damages. It's declaring that capital punishment for crimes against individuals is only appropriate when a victim dies. CBS News chief legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
The court's majority couldn't be more clear. It is not looking for ways to expand the death penalty in this country.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
The High Court today slashing that $2.5 billion punitive damages award in the Exxon Valdez oil spill to $500 million. Reporter Kerry Anderson in Anchorage.
30,000 Alaska fishermen and natives each will receive an average of $15,000. Alaska fishermen like Ted Rayner say that's not even close to being fair.
That is not much for destroyed livelihoods, altered futures, and 14 years of litigation. That's a slap in the face to every single plaintiff in this matter.
This is the final ruling in the case of the 1989 Exxon oil spill, which killed countless thousands of birds, mammals, and fish, and tainted 1,500 miles of Alaska coastline.
Now this.
There's a reason you come to Sherwin-Williams. You just expect more from us. Better paint, better advice, a better way to realize your vision.
At your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store, we have exceptional products and unparalleled expertise because painting and decorating is all we do. And now save up to 20% on a wide variety of paints and stains. Stop in. You'll be amazed what happens when you ask. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
I have high cholesterol. Now I'm eating well and staying active. Guess what? Walmart is doing their part to lower my numbers, too. I can get up to a 3-month supply of my prescription for just $10. So instead of spending more time picking up my medicine, I spend more time picking up my grandkids.
Hi, Grandma.
The Walmart Pharmacy Prescription Program includes hundreds of popular medicines. A 90-day supply of prescription drugs is now $10. A month's supply is still $4. Save money. Live better. Walmart. Restrictions apply. See Walmart.com or your pharmacist for details.
Children used as prostitutes. It's a crime being fought on the national level.
Calling child prostitution rings a form of organized crime, the FBI spent a week rounding up suspects from coast to coast, 16 cities in all, including Miami, Detroit, and Houston. As he announced the arrest totals, FBI Director Robert Mueller said that 21 children were moved to safety.
There were a number of goals in the sweep. Most prominent is to identify those individuals who are juveniles and take them out of the cycle of victimization.
Officials say the Internet is fueling the problem through social networking sites and the classifieds like like Craigslist. Stephanie Lambidakis, CBS News, the Justice Department.
Bad news if you live along a certain swollen stretch of the mighty Mississippi.
It was the worst possible news, another delay in the Mississippi's crest.
We're expecting it to crest on the evening of the 27th at 37.5, which is 0.4 of a foot more than anticipated.
And that raises more concerns about a weakened levee.
Our Pin Oak levee system has just taken a beating from the Mississippi River.
And now spokesman Andy Binder says sandbagging efforts have been put on hold.
Our sand quarry is underwater. So now we have to reach out into other communities and other counties to get the sand that we need.
Tammy McCormick, CBS News, Winfield, Missouri.
Too much water in the Midwest, but in some places not a drop to drink. So Hendrickson Enterprises, an Iowa trucking firm, fills two of its big rigs with drinking water, drives them where FEMA tells them to, the Rock Island Arsenal, where they've been sitting.
My guys and my trucks are sitting there, and it's been over a week now.
Owner Jody Hendrickson, why do the trucks with water simply sit there?
The reason that we're getting is that they want to be ready to take this water to where it's best needed for the flood, and evidently they don't know where to take it.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger than life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
I have high cholesterol. Now I'm eating well and staying active. Guess what? Walmart is doing their part to lower my numbers, too. I can get up to a 3-month supply of my prescription for just $10. So instead of spending more time picking up my medicine, I spend more time picking up my grandkids.
Hi, Grandma.
The Walmart Pharmacy Prescription Program includes hundreds of popular medicines. A 90-day supply of prescription drugs is now $10. A month supply is still $4. Save money. Live better. Walmart. Restrictions apply. See Walmart.com or your pharmacist for details.
California.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
And like any antidote, we suggest you apply it often and liberally. Later this hour, the top statewide Democratic elected official in California will join us. The guy who's just a steroid heartbeat away from the governor's office. Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi a little later this hour. But first, let's talk about why people decide to become Democrats. Or why they decide to remain a Democrat, because sometimes you're born into a family and, well, you don't really have a choice. Susan Mulcahy is a recovering gossip columnist. She lives in Brooklyn. Her work has appeared in Vanity Fair, The New York Times, and Oprah's O Magazine. She's the former editor of The New York Post's Page Six, where all good gossip finds space. And she's published this book, which is based on interviews and commentaries from a wide range of Americans, called Why I'm a Democrat. Susan Mulcahy, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thanks, Peter. I'm delighted to be on the show.
Well, it's good to have you with us. And let me just start off with the tough part, and then it'll get easier.
Okay.
I'm not a Democrat, okay? I'm a progressive liberal left guy who is a declined estate voter. That's what we call it here in California.
I don't know, Peter. I think you might be a Democrat.
Yeah, well, I'll let you decide over the course of the next 20 minutes or so.
Okay.
But I'm just having a hell of a time with the Democrats right now. I know Nancy Pelosi. My listeners know I used to work for her. I was a campaign consultant once upon a time. And I am so bitterly disappointed at what they did last week. To volunteer to give more money for the war and occupation in Iraq than the administration even asked for this time, and then to turn around and sell us out on the FISA law. this way of legalizing the law-breaking of the Bush administration, permitting even more expansive surveillance of Americans in the future. And so I put it to you today, are you feeling that it's difficult to tag yourself as a Democrat at this moment?
No, I'm very happy to be a Democrat, and I've always been happy to be a Democrat. I don't agree with everything they do, but I think, and I think that the, you know, the current Democratic leadership in Congress could be more aggressive, and hoping that the next time the next Congress comes around and convenes, they'll be more aggressive. But I'm still happy to be a Democrat. I can't say that I want to be, I could have, at certain times in my life, I've looked at being an independent, and I thought, nope, it's better to, in the book, Frank McCourt makes the point that at one point, he left the party and became an independent because he was really ticked off at the Democrats. Mm-hmm. And then he decided to come back because he realized that being a rebel within the organization is more effective than stepping outside it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand that, and I my way of being an inside agitator is to do a talk radio show like this, and that's how I've kind of directed my politics and my efforts over the last 20 or 30 years. At the same time, it is often difficult. There's no question about it. We can't all agree on everything at the same moment. But the most critical issues that we gave a Democratic majority in 2006 and assigned them to take care of have either been ignored or, in my view, sharply worsened under their leadership.
Well, one of the people that I interviewed for the book, and there were a lot of the idea behind the book was to create a snapshot of the Democratic Party in a year when they are the political story.
Mm-hmm.
Some writers, though, everyone from Dominic Dunn and Jonathan Franzen, Tama Janowitz, Min Jin Lee, wrote essays. A lot of artists contributed some wonderful drawings and cartoons like Roz Chast and Myra Kalman from The New Yorker. And then I interviewed probably, 32 people from all over the country. And one person that I interviewed in New York, Dr. Irwin Redlener, who's a very prominent physician and children's health advocate, he made the point that, 35 years ago when he was starting out, he figured that at some point within the 10-year period, there would be children's health insurance would be universal. And he could not believe that in the year 2007, it did not happen and that a Democratic Congress did not fight harder for it. And yet he said he remains a Democrat because he feels like they are the hope for the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we are boxed in. The two-party system has a stranglehold on our politics. I would like to see instant runoff voting as a way to empower third parties, but it's not broadly available now. And even a guy like Mike Bloomberg, sitting on billions of dollars, took a look at the landscape and said, you know what? It's silly for an independent to run for president or vice president because you can't get on the ballot in many states and you can't win the electoral college votes that are the critical link to winning the presidency. So in that vein, we as progressives and liberals don't have much choice. What I resent is being taken for granted, and that there appears to be a calculation that the Democrats, at least enough of them, can allow this war funding to continue, and they can still pretend to be the party that's against the war.
Well, I would agree with, I'm not for increased funding for the war, and I didn't agree with that vote, but it doesn't make me want to change my voter's registration. It makes me want to let the people that I voted for know that I'm not in favor of that.
Susan,
it doesn't make me want to switch, you know, become an independent, and certainly not to become a Republican.
Susan Mulcahy is with us, editor of Why I'm a Democrat. It's out in softcover from Polypoint Press and should be at your local bookstore for under $15. Now, this one is nice and brief, so I'm going to read it in its entirety. It's the entry from Nora Ephron. 10 reasons why I'm a Democrat. 1, my parents were Democrats. 2, I'm deeply in love with some abstract concept called FDR. 3, the Democratic Party stands for everything I stand for, even though I'm not sure exactly where the Democratic Party is in reality. But it's definitely still in existence in my imagination. It believes that government exists to make life better for its citizens in an activist way. 4, I have never voted for a Republican. 5, I barely know a Republican. 6, the Supreme Court. 7, the Supreme Court. 8, the Supreme Court. 9, the Supreme Court. 10, if you have to guess, you're in trouble.
There you go.
And my sense is that there are many people who are Democrats because, well, the alternative is just so ugly.
Here we go, starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored. Hey, hey, we're Republicans. And people say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown? We lie whenever we want to. Yeah, you know it's true. And if you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news. Hey, hey, we're the Republicans. And people say we act like clowns. We just steal elections. Run the country into the ground.
Susan Mulcahy asked Isaac Mizrahi, the fashion designer, why are you a Democrat? The answer? Because I'm not mean and selfish enough to be a Republican. He really
I like that answer.
Yeah.
I really liked his observation about good versus great. He said that the Republicans are always talking about how great they are, and when you're great, you have to have a fight over something. It's a result. Whereas if you're good, it's something you do every day, and it's about your life, not about a battle to win something. And I thought that was a great observation.
Susan, I want to get your reaction to some comments from Gary Hart, the former United States senator, one-time presidential candidate, victim of a bimbo eruption. And he writes in today's New York Times, Democrats have yet to produce a coherent ideological framework to replace the New Deal, despite an eight-year experiment in triangulation and an undefined centrism. Once elected, Barack Obama would have a rare opportunity to define a new Democratic Party. He could preside over the beginning of a new political cycle that, if relevant to the times, would dominate American politics for three or four decades to come. Obama has two choices. He can focus on winning the election to the exclusion of all else, like Robert Redford in The Candidate, and ask, what do we do now after it's over? Or he can use his campaign as a platform for designing a new political cycle and achieve a mandate for starting it. Well, I think this offers a vision for the future. Do you think that Barack Obama has the means and the savvy, if he gets elected, to take office in January and really move to change things? Or do you think he'll get a brick wall thrown in front of him the way Bill Clinton did when he arrived in 92 and said, let's lift that ban on gays in the military?
No, I think the thing that strikes me the most about Barack Obama is how sane he is. He's not a screaming hysteric. And I think that that is to his advantage in just about everything he does. And when I listen to him speak, I think this man is going to know. And I look forward to seeing what he's going to come up with, because the New Deal and the interviews in this book, it's become very fashionable to sort of throw darts at FDR and the New Deal and say, oh, that was then. We've got to, that's so old hat. And it is old hat. Social Security has been around for a while, and there are a lot of things about it that don't work. But there are a lot of programs that came out of the 30s and the New Deal that created the world we live in today, but constantly just sort of taking the same thing and throwing it in people's faces doesn't work. You have to redefine it and, I don't know, create something new, but you don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. You want to keep the things that really work.
And Tony Bennett, in your book, is old enough to remember, why are you a Democrat, Tony Bennett? FDR. I grew up during the Depression, and I've stayed a Democrat my whole life. My dad died when I was very young. My mother had to raise three children. She was a seamstress. She worked for a penny a dress. I couldn't believe the way the Hoover administration left everybody so stranded. I've never gotten over that. I know the times change, but not really.
Yeah, well, he was also one of three or four people that brought up the growing chasm between the haves and the have-nots. And he said he was made a citizen of the world by the UN, and he travels around in these countries where one small segment of the population has all the wealth and everybody else is struggling. He said, please, don't let that happen here, and I see it happening here. And a lot of people that either are from other countries, one Hector Betancourt, who I interviewed, who's from Cuba, and he saw it happen there, people brought that up over and over again as a really, really critical issue.
Susan Mulcahy with us, the editor of Why I'm a Democrat. We're going to take a break, and when we return, I'm open for your phone calls. And you can either answer the question, why are you a Democrat, Or you can tell me why you're not a Democrat or you're thinking of leaving. And, gosh, if Drew, the Republican's listening, you can call in, too. 888-5, Peter B., that's my toll-free number, 888-573-8372. And I've got one copy of Why I'm a Democrat. I'll give it to one of the clever callers who joins us in the next segment. 888-573-8372 puts you through to the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way and the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Good afternoon. Checking traffic on KRXA. We'll start things off in Castroville. Heads up, Highway 1 at Merritt Street. A spilled load of strawberries all over the roadway, creating slippery conditions. Drive with caution. Greenfield, South 101 before Hudson Road. It's an injury accident. Vehicle off the roadway hit a pole and then landed in a field. You have emergency crews on the scene. Possible slow traffic as you approach the scene there. For Southern Monterey County, Southbound 1, just north of the Garapata Creek, we have both lanes now open following an earlier crash. Car and a bicyclist involved. You have a tow truck on the scene taking away the damaged vehicle. Highway 17 currently checking in stalling accident free and no problems to tell you about right now on Highway 68. This is brought to you by Orkin Pest Control, where you see one pest, you know there's more. Visit OrkinMan.com for a free online pest test. Orkin, keeping pests in their place. Now, if you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. Lines open if you'd like to explain why you're a Democrat, why you're not, or why you're a Republican. 888-5-PETER-B. Toll free, 888-573-8372. Susan Mulcahy, editor of this new book, Why I'm a Democrat, is with us on the line right now. I just flipped past the dedication here. For Jean Grace Mulcahy, who encouraged all six of her children to be good Democrats, and Paul N. Mulcahy, a Republican who is having second thoughts. Is that both your parents?
Yes, I am from a mixed marriage. It's true.
And did that scar you? Years of psychotherapy, or what was required?
No. We all felt sort of sorry for my dad. One time someone came around doing a census. It was when most of us were adults and had moved away, and they listed off everyone in the household, and there are six kids in my family. So, and everyone's voter registration, and it was like Democrat, 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 and one of my sisters felt so sorry for him that she re-registered as a Republican, but only for a year.
So he wouldn't be all alone.
He wouldn't be all by himself.
And the second thoughts, did Bush lead to that?
I'm sorry?
Did your father's second thoughts, the Bush administration?
Yes. Well, even before that. And I think he's recently, although he's loath to admit it, been voting for Democrats. But he claims not to, you know, he won't say.
Okay. Now, in reading your book, I found two of my pals in here. One is John Elliott, and he called just before you came on the air to ask me to sit in for him tomorrow night on Air America.
Ah, okay, great.
So that's interesting little serendipity. And from this, I learned that he's a hosehead. I didn't know he was from Canada.
Yes.
I've known him for a few years, but I didn't know that part of it. So,
well, and he said that his heroes, because they get the American news and they learned about American history in Canada, were the Kennedys, but that also Lester Pearson, who was head of the Liberal Party, was his hero, and that in Canada the Liberal Party is really the same as the Democrats, and that they really had a huge influence
mm-hmm.
on him.
Well, and Norman Solomon is also in your book. He is a great guy, a media critic, the author of War Made Easy and the companion documentary. And he also founded the Institute for Public Accuracy that helps get progressive voices into the corporate media. And his response, why am I a Democrat? In a word, Republicans.
Well, I say he is probably closest to you, Peter, in political philosophy. Of all the 55 contributors in the book, I would say, because he is a former independent who, like most of the independents, and I have a whole chapter on former independents who've come back to the fold, he realizes that the way to get change made is within the organization. And to get better, we've got some great Democrats in office, but I would agree that some are not so hot. And he thinks that the way to get the change implemented is to work from within the party and get better Democrats mm-hmm. elected.
Well, yeah, I agree. And in your book, he cites his problems as a supporter of Ralph Nader in 2000 and what that taught him. So that's an interesting angle. Let's talk to Mildred in Coos Bay, listening to KBBR. Hi, Mildred.
Hi, Peter B. Well, the reason I became a Democrat was when I was a senior in high school when they taught American history, civics, and government. There was this teacher who was a Democrat, a rare bird, by the way, and talked about the Centralia, Illinois mining disaster in the 50s mm-hmm. and unsafe working conditions, sending all these people to work and the mine falling in on them. I was very shocked by that because I no longer was naive after reading that, and then I started reading a bunch of other stuff, and I've been a progressive ever since.
And have you ever checked out of the party? Was Carter, Clinton, any of those people too much for you or too little?
No, I never checked out of the party because I wanted to vote in a primary. Up here in Oregon, if you're an independent, you can't vote in any primaries or anything, and I wanted to be able to put my two cents in.
I see. Interesting. Well, Mildred, hold on. We'll get your address, and I'm going to mail you this copy of Why I'm a Democrat.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for checking in today. Now to Richard in Fortuna. Hello, Richard, listening to KGOE.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for being there. Hey, I've been a lifelong Democrat, and I'm actually considering leaving the party and going independent because we voted in the Democratic Congress in order to stop these things like FISA and all this, but they're getting passed anyway, and nothing's been done as far as I'm concerned. So what do we do with Bush and that old group?
Well, my advice is that you be selective, and I'm supporting progressive challengers for Congress like Darcy Berner in Washington State, Charlie Brown here in California, Dr. Bill Durston, And I think that's our best bet. Your party registration is less important to me than who you support with your dollars and your votes. Quick comment, Susan?
Well, I really agree with that. And even there have even been some good Republicans along the way. One of the people I interviewed, Ronald Davenport, who's the chairman of Sheridan Broadcasting in Pennsylvania, he made the point immediately when we started the interview. He said, I'm a Democrat, always have been, but I voted for Republicans like John Hines. So, you know, it's about the person and it's about supporting the right candidate.
Yeah. Susan, great to talk with you. Thanks for writing Why I'm a Democrat.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you. Thanks all around.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Save the suburbs. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. This is getting crazy. Across the country, the housing market's in full retreat. Congress is getting ready to help people pay their mortgages. But this isn't just about unaffordable mortgages. This is about unaffordable everything. This is a direct attack on the suburban roots of millions of Americans. This is about everything the suburbs stand for. This is a whole lifestyle under attack now. It's the lifestyle that made us who we are as middle-class suburbians, a lifestyle based on six unshakable concepts: the lawn, the detached house, the barbecue, the extra refrigerator in the garage, at least two cars, and a boat. And it's under attack from all sides. You can't take care of the lawn because some official now wants to check the documents of the guy who knows how to mow it. The house is in trouble because even though you've stuffed it full of insulation and replaced the windows with double panes, then the triple panes and converted from oil to gas to wood stove, every energy source costs more. The barbecue is in trouble because the price of corn is going to force cattle ranchers to boost the price of beef. The refrigerator in the garage, full of bottled water? Well, that's the reason the ice cap is melting. The two cars? Well, we know what the problem with the two cars is. And the boat? Unless it's sitting in the front yard full of petunias, forget the boat. And perhaps most tragic of all, just as all this is happening, traffic is actually getting better. Even commuters in Los Angeles, who used to be able to get through most of the newspaper on the way home, now have to pay attention to the road and come up with something to talk about at dinner. That's the unkindest cut of all, that just when we can no longer afford to use them, the highways open up. Somebody stop it! Now this.
Email. Something people and now businesses cannot live without. New federal e-discovery laws require that certain companies retain email communication for litigation purposes or face serious fines.
Lose the risk, not your wallet.
By installing a Barracuda Message Archiver today. The Barracuda Message Archiver is a comprehensive yet affordable plug-and-play device that indexes and stores all email traffic for easy search and retrieval, providing immediate government compliance. Try the Barracuda Message Archiver free for 30 days. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or log on to Barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Natura Vita invites all KRXA listeners to participate in a grand opening of its new North Salinas location at 650 East Laurel Drive. Don't miss the fun. With nonstop entertainment, live music, and free samples of natural food and health products, the staff and management welcome all to the inauguration of the new Natura Vita store and restaurant at 650 East Laurel Drive in North Salinas this Sunday afternoon, June 29th from 3 to 5. Don't miss your chance to learn firsthand about traditional and modern natural health products and practices while enjoying delicious and healthy food in a fun and festive atmosphere. Smoothies, anyone? Come to the new Natura Vita store and restaurant this Sunday afternoon from 3 to 5.
Live
live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
California is on fire.
The god of hellfire, and I bring you fire.
Yes, it's hard to count them all. By some estimates, over 800 wildfires broke out in California over the past week. And firefighters are busy with aerial support in some cases, trying to get everything in containment and under control. And it's not easy. And I certainly give a lot of credit and pay tribute to those who are out there on the front lines of the fires. We turn now to Sacramento, where Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi joins us today. John, what's the status of the firefighting and the containment from the Sacramento perspective?
Well, you said it very well, Peter. We have thousands of men and women out there fighting these fires, and they're doing a very heroic and job in extremely difficult situations. Some of the terrain is literally straight up and down. Others are protecting homes that are in dangerous areas. It is a very, very tough and dangerous situation for those firefighters. There's probably around 800 fires, lightning strikes. We were dealt a bad hand weekend, and so we have these fires all over the state. Some are huge down in the Monterey Bay area in the National Forest down there. It's probably 60,000 acres and growing. Up in the Siskiyous in the far north of California, similar situation. It'll be several tens of thousands of acres before those are brought into control. Fortunately, not much damage to homes, although scattered homes here and there have been lost in a lot of evacuations. It is a very dangerous situation. Still, large fires are still out of control. Containment 10, 15, 20% in various areas. So it's a dangerous, dicey situation, and we've got help from throughout the western United States, calling on resources from our neighboring states and the federal government.
And as Lieutenant Governor, what role do you play in either monitoring or coordinating some of the responses to a series of disasters like this, John?
Well, it varies. For example, right now I'm the acting governor. Governor Schwarzenegger has left the state. We chatted about 2 hours ago as he was departing the state. We talked about these fires and the role. So the role I have for the next day until he returns is acting governor. So as things come up, it may be the necessity for emergency proclamations, other action that only the governor can take. So I'm in constant communication with the Office of Emergency Services. I have my security with me, and so we're doing what a governor would do in this case. In the past, a year ago, the Angora fire, the governor was in Europe, and it was my responsibility to make sure the resources were available, and they were made available, and so we go on. I also play a role in the emergency council and on policy side. Mm-hmm. Right now, working on the budget, which is going to be a difficult, tough situation, and one in which we really are going to make sure we must have the money to provide for the public safety. So there's a debate going on, and I'm engaged in that debate.
And, John, last year with the San Diego wildfires, I give you credit because you were willing to go on national television and offer critical comments, and there were causes for criticism there. And well, so with your background as the first elected insurance commissioner here in California, that was your first term, and then you served a second term as insurance commissioner.
Right.
I don't know anybody who is closer to the issues of homeowners and other residents who are threatened by or lose their property to a disaster of this sort, going back to the Oakland Hills fire in the 1990s. You know, you've been on the case and advocating for the homeowners and the insured in many of these critical situations.
Well, it's true. I'll hold the insurance piece for just a second, because you did remind me of something that I think is really critically important. A year ago when we had the San Diego, a little less than a year ago when we had the San Diego fire, I said that one of the problems is that our National Guard does not have the resources they are deployed in Iraq. And I said, bring those resources home. You know, the right wing went off on that, and we've made a big national issue out of it. They hammered me. But the fact of the matter is that about 50% of all of the equipment is not in California. And we're short of helicopters. We've called upon our neighboring states to bring in helicopters to help us with these fires. So that situation remains, and this country's in trouble for a variety of reasons. One of them is that we are spending a fortune larger than any other country has ever seen on an irresponsible and unnecessary war in Iraq. And that does affect us here at home. It affects the federal budget, the federal firefighting budget, and it does affect us in California. Now, but I feel better, let's talk about insurance.
Okay, go ahead.
On the insurance side, there are constant issues with insurance, largely because the insurance industry's first commandment is thou shalt pay as little as late as possible. And so there's always trouble with the payment of claims. Not every company, but over time you'll find that these problems persist. It's hard to get a claim paid. And when everything is gone, when your house is nothing but a pile of ashes and maybe a foundation, it is very, very difficult. Obviously, tremendous stress and trauma to the individuals who have lost their home. And then comes the second blow, and that's from the insurance industry. Having to itemize every single thing that was in the house and the value of where you purchased it, what it was, a very difficult, in fact, an impossible task. And then the underinsurance issue, not enough insurance to rebuild, and probably 30% of the homes in California do not have enough insurance to rebuild. There's a complete loss of the home. And these are things that individual homeowners and renters need to pay attention to. They need to make sure they've got enough insurance to replace their belongings as well as home. And that requires getting a good estimate of what it costs. You can go to your insurance companies. You may want to go out to an outside engineer or appraiser to get you a handle on that. But please, everybody, make sure you got enough insurance. It costs you a little more money, to be sure, but you can increase your deductible. And I will tell you from the experience in Southern California and in Tahoe with 1 year ago, the Angora fire, people that do not have enough insurance stand to lose thousands of dollars between what it costs to rebuild and the insurance they have. The deductible may be $5,000, $10,000, and that is a very, very small proportion to what you could lose if you don't have enough insurance.
Yeah.
The second thing is be prepared. Peter B., have you gone around your home with a camera and recording what's in each room and what its value is and where you got it?
No, I thought you were going to ask me if I'd whacked all the weeds outside, and I was going to be able to say yes to that.
Well, that would be the defensible space. Peter B. had a gold star and one attaboy. The defensible space is required by law, and we all ought to be doing that.
Yeah, I live under a grove of eucalyptus trees, so
are in deep, deep dangerous trouble.
Yes, I'm very conscious of that. Now, to your other question, I am overdue to update the inventory of the belongings in our house, and I'll cop to that.
Well, all you need is a little cam recorder and go around and talk about what's there. You might, if you can get up close and get the make, model, that's very useful. In that, you're going to save yourself, or everyone will save themselves, an enormous trauma when it comes time to document what was lost in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Go around the outside of the house also and describe the nature of the building, the yard, and other things that are insured pertinent to the house. And then, Peter, not store that in your home.
Right.
Yeah. Send it to your mother-in-law or your a friend in some faraway communities. Can be retrieved.
Mm-hmm.
That's a valuable piece of information that all of us may need if there's a fire.
Yeah. John Garamendi with us, California's Lieutenant Governor. Now, John, let me ask you about this, because when a disaster like this occurs, there is I guess it's fair to say that politicians are drawn to the flames like a moth. And I'm not taking a cheap shot at Governor Schwarzenegger, but his press office has already sent me photographs of a press conference that he held at one of the Monterey Fire Command Posts earlier today. And my question to you is, how do you make a decision as to whether your visit as acting governor to a crisis scene is going to be helpful or be a distraction? And I'm not, again, I'm not judging the governor for this photo op in Monterey today. I wasn't there, and I don't know if it was a net plus or a distraction. But I know that from the floods in Iowa, that when John McCain went there last week, a lot of local officials said, please, this is not a place for a political photo op.
Well, you said the right word is disruption, and that's a judgment call. My standard is early on in a disaster, in a fire, where the resources are being marshaled, and the men and women of the public safety, police, fire, and so forth, where they are busy doing their job, it's not a good place to be. Because, you know, an elected official, governor, president, certainly the president, the governor and even lieutenant governor, when you show up, it is a disruption. And so you want to be constantly aware of that particular time. Once that settles down, and it may be a long-term firefight, and I think this is probably the case in Monterey. I think he probably went to the
He was in Big Sur at the Andrew Molera State Park.
Okay, well, that's the fire at the Los Padres National Forest. That one's been going on for more than a month. And so things have settled down. There's a routine that's in place, and the disruption is probably minor, if at all, for the firefighting operation. There is a very good reason for the governor, lieutenant governor, and even the president to arrive at a disaster scene. And I think this was seen most recently at the Tahoe fire a year ago, where the fire is out or nearly out, and people are wondering, what do we do next? What help can we have? And at that particular fire, I was up there, I think, basically the day that it had been contained. And I met with the local officials and shared with them the experiences that I've had in Oakland and San Diego and Malibu and other fires that I've been involved in as insurance commissioner, and said, these are things you can do. Here's what you can expect from the victims of this fire, and be prepared. They used that information to set up a community process of clearing the debris, providing for fast track for various permits that are needed, and involving the state, various state agencies to very rapidly clean up and let the reconstruction process begin, as well as providing necessary services such as insurance and so forth. That same model I then took to San Diego about 6 months later when the fires broke out there. And it was employed in San Diego. So there's a role in providing information. There's also a role in providing comfort. And that really cannot be underestimated. There's a certain level of comfort that you can bring, and certainly Schwarzenegger, because of his star power, is very well able to do that.
But last year with the San Diego fires, I recall the president flew in and they had to stop the aerial firefighting because the no-fly zone was established for the Air Force One to come in and out. And so it's that kind of situation where I say, hey, let's solve the crisis, and you can do the photo ops and take credit for it later.
I couldn't agree more, and that's what I say about disruption. There's a very... we must be very aware of the disruption. And the president, wherever he travels, is disrupting. The security, the Secret Service, and all that goes with it is extraordinarily disrupting. And the governor less so. And so as a public official, we must be aware of that. And you gave a very good example of the president disrupting a firefighting operation.
We're going to take a break and return with California's Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi. If you have a question or comment, you can call me now, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. I want to ask him about the suspension of aerial spraying for the light brown apple moth, and if there's time, we'll hit some other issues, too. More in a moment with John Garamendi here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Thank you.
Checking traffic on KRXA, and just one accident to tell you about right now. It's in Greenfield, South 101 before Hudson Road. A vehicle overturned off the roadway, hit a pole, and then landed in a field. You have emergency crews on the scene trying to bring this vehicle back up onto the roadway. That will cause minor delays as you pass the scene. Northbound 1 at San Andreas Road in Santa Cruz County, getting reports of a shovel across the two left-hand lanes, so definitely drive with caution there. 17th Santa Cruz Mountains currently problem-free with the usual slowing once you get to the Fish Hook in Santa Cruz. Southbound traffic from the Fish Hook will stay slow as you make your way down into Aptos this evening. 101 going through Salinas, we currently have no problems to tell you about, and this is brought to you by Bullfrog Mosquito Coast. Bullfrog Mosquito Coast is the number one selling insect repellent and sunscreen combination. It blocks the burn and the bite. Its unique formula is ideal for the entire family. Look for Mosquito Coast in the sunscreen section. If you spot a traffic problem, call us 415-901-7990. I'm Nate, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Experience the magic of Scotland and Ireland without ever leaving Monterey County. The 41st Annual Monterey Scottish Games and Celtic Festival will be held on Saturday and Sunday, July 5th and 6th, at the beautiful Toro Park on Highway 68 in Salinas. The Scottish Festival offers fun activities for the whole family, including great athletic events like the famous caber toss. You'll enjoy Scottish and Irish entertainers, great crafts, tasty British food, and sheepdog demonstrations. Enjoy the colourful mass pipe bands and Highland dancers, and don't miss the Saturday evening barbecue. Special Sunday entertainment with pipers and dancers. Put on your kilts, grab your bagpipes, or just come on down to the 41st Annual Monterey Scottish Games and Celtic Festival. Information and advance tickets are available at montereyscotgames.com or call 831-333-9423.
Yeah.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 9 minutes in front of the hour, as we continue with California's Democratic Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi. And we're taking calls, too. Got a couple of listeners we'll get to here in just a second. John, one of the things that occurred last week, to the elation of many of my listeners, particularly in Santa Cruz and Pacific Grove, is that it was announced that there will be no aerial spraying for the light brown apple moth of this pheromone spray in populated areas. And I know that's a relief to many people. What is your sense? Is this the right outcome of this dispute?
Well, I think it's what was necessary at this time. What we really must do is that over the, I don't know, days, months, years ahead, we will have invasive species that can be very, very harmful to California, not just agriculture, but to horticulture and the flora of the state. And we need to get ahead of that, and we need to make sure that we have good, solid information as to the pheromone, what harm, if any, it can cause to humans and animals, and any, certainly to other bugs besides the one that you're looking to eradicate. We just really need to be ahead of the game, and then we have to engage in a very solid and honest public information program so the public knows and understands why it's important, if in fact it is, and what the process is and what harm, if any, could come from the application of the pheromones or whatever else it may be. These are lessons that we should have learned years ago, but we don't seem to remember. And where are we going now? Well, will continue in the outlying areas, and hopefully that will resolve the issue. But this particular bug, and there's going to be others coming along that that could be very, very harmful to the very ecology of California, to say nothing of agriculture. So we have to be on top of it, Peter. In any case, a good point for us right now is not on the urban areas, and that's, I think, to all of our benefit.
Let's go to Molly in Big Sur, where a fire is burning. And, Molly, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with the Lieutenant Governor.
Hi. I just wanted to mention, I don't know how disruptive it was, but that our fire down here that the governor came to visit was it's just 3 days old.
Yeah, John.
The Indians is in another part of the county.
John, what I have here is the photo that I got from the governor's office is at the Basin Complex fire, and that started on Monday, and that's burned 7,000 acres so far, and they had it 3% contained as of Monday evening. I don't have updated information on it right now.
Well, thank you for the information. I confused two different fires.
Okay, Molly,
they're all uniting, of course, at this moment.
And Molly, just tell us about your situation. Are you safe?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's fine.
So, Molly,
yeah.
Have you done an inventory of your belongings, and do you have enough insurance to rebuild?
Yep.
Yes, good.
Yep.
Yes. That away,
my
Molly.
Friends losing their homes that makes me sad.
Yeah. All right, Molly, thank you for the call. Now to Nick over in Santa Cruz. Welcome, Nick. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
How you doing, guys? I'm just wondering why we don't hear much about any new technology or anything for fire detection or fire prevention. It seems to me, I have some suggestions. So
all right. Give us two of your favorites, Nick.
Well, first of all, there's a company in Canada called Magin that has a airborne kind of a blimp generator that they're coming out with at the end of this year. And it's for, like, remote power supplies. And it seems to me if you put a thermal imaging camera like we used to use FLIR in the military on one of these blimps, you should be able to, they're about 5,000 to 6,000 feet up in the air. You should be able to cover at least a few square miles and be able to see a hot spot as soon as it comes up.
All right, well, let's ask John Garamendi, what is the state of the art at the Crisis Center and the California Department of Forestry?
Well, infrared technology has been used for several years, and it's in constant use to determine exactly what the gentleman said, and that is where are the hot spots, where's the fire growing, how is it growing. The use of satellites and now moving to drone airplanes, it's very common practice.
All right. Nick, your other suggestion?
Well, the problem with that is it seems that these aren't stationary and that they're not going to be there. You need something that's going to be there all the time monitoring this. And it seems like this would be the type of application that actually could solve that problem.
But the new thing that you've talked about is the use of a blimp.
What I mean is you put the FLIR thermal imaging camera on the actual blimp and you you just hook up a satellite feed to it. So you can remotely put these anywhere. They need no infrastructure because they're making their own power.
Well, it's well worth considering.
Well, let's get Nick deputized to the State Office of Emergency Services.
Yeah,
well, what he needs to do, if you or this company are connected in any way, the information should be sent to the CAL FIRE. They're always looking for new technologies and new techniques of identifying and identifying hotspots, identifying where the fires are. One of the things that is now readily available is to know where the lightning strikes are with the use of various radar and other sensing devices, including satellite.
Mm-hmm.
We actually know in a very precise way where the lightning strikes are. We send out aircraft to determine whether that lightning strike may or may not have started a fire.
All right, Nick, thank you very much.
Modern technology is really important.
Nick, thanks for calling in today. Good to hear from you in Santa Cruz. John, about a minute remaining. Next week, some new laws take effect, and you can't drive talking on your cell phone. You have to have a hands-free device. And I just got an email. I can't prove if this is true, but this person is saying that the carpool lane violation is going to jump to over $1,000 starting July 1st. Do you know this to be true?
I don't know.
Okay.
Let's just say we better find out. And if it's true, what is it for being in a carpool without a
If you're in a carpool lane,
passenger?
Yeah, without a passenger or without a Prius sticker, it's currently $271, and according to this email, it is jumping up to over a grand starting July 1st.
Well, Peter, I tell you what, I will call my office as soon as I get off the phone, and I will find out what the fact is, and we'll email, and then you, before your program's over, maybe you'll have an answer to it.
That's great. That's excellent.
Thanks, Peter.
John, thank you very much, and good luck as you manage this emergency.
Yeah. Well, we've got a lot of good people out there, the Office of Emergency Services and the firefighters. They're on top of it. We'll get it under control. We are California. We will eventually overcome all of these difficulties.
All right, John. Great to talk with you. We'll do it again real soon. Okay. Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Up next, it's the Free Speech Zone. I've got room for your call. You want to talk about fires? You want to talk about politics? My ears are open. And lines are open, too, at 888-5-PETER-B.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become. When a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader. From Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor, you name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at thekingofamerica.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Strong decisions from the Supreme Court today and reaction to them. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato.
On two hot-button issues, the Supreme Court has gone well beyond simply deciding cases. It's laying out clear principles and rules. Except for perhaps treason and espionage, capital punishment should be reserved, the court says, for crimes in which a victim dies. Death penalty foe David Brock.
We have seen language in this opinion that we haven't heard from the Supreme Court in well over a generation.
Chamber of Commerce lawyer Amar Sarwal praises the court for creating a formula to figure and limit punitive damage awards.
It's not going to eliminate punitive damage awards, but it's going to make them more predictable.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Democrat Barack Obama says he disagrees with the Supreme Court's decision outlawing execution of child rapists.
The rape of a small child is a heinous crime. And if a state makes a decision that under narrow, limited, well-defined circumstances, the death penalty is at least potentially applicable, that does not violate our Constitution.
Republican presidential candidate John McCain sounding a similar note. He calls today's ruling an assault on efforts to punish those heinous felons for a most despicable crime. FBI Director Robert Mueller announcing results of a nationwide crackdown today on child prostitution.
Those who exploit children should know that they will be brought to justice, they will be investigated, they will be prosecuted, they will be convicted, and they will go to jail.
Supply and demand. Now, when it comes to energy, there's no slowdown forecast in demand.
We see strong global growth in energy consumption over the next 25 years. 50% increase in the global demand for energy.
Guy Caruso, Energy Information Administration. Among the agency's predictions over the next two decades, oil for $186 a barrel. Today, by the way, it drops $2.45. A string of successive rate cuts comes to an end. CBS News correspondent Dan Revive with the lowdown from the Fed.
The bottom line, no change. The Fed funds rate banks use to lend to each other stays at 2%, the prime rate at 5%. The reasons are interesting. A Fed statement says there's now a little less risk that economic growth will stop, while there's an increasing risk of inflation arise, especially in energy prices, and both those factors suggest no more rate cuts. Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
Neil Entwistle, guilty.
The case that started on a cold day in January 2006 ended right here this afternoon when the jury, after deliberating for a day and a half, reached its verdict in this double murder trial of Neil Entwistle.
Guilty of murder in the first degree of William Entwistle.
And guilty of killing his wife, Rachel. Neal closed his eyes briefly when he heard the verdict, but other than that had little reaction. Sentencing will be tomorrow. He faces a mandatory life in prison without parole. Carl Stevens for CBS News, Woburn, Massachusetts.
This is CBS News.
Who's ready for a better wild bird food? Who's ready for all food and no filler? Who's ready for new Scott's Songbird selection? From the trusted name in lawn and garden, Scott's has the finest ingredients and no fillers. So unlike ordinary mixes, it's more of what birds want and less mess on the ground. Just fill your feeder today with Scott's Songbird selections and bring more colorful, musical songbirds to your backyard. To find out where you can buy, visit scottswildbirdfood.com.
I have high cholesterol. Now I'm eating well and staying active. Guess what? Walmart is doing their part to lower my numbers, too. I can get up to a 3-month supply of my prescription for just $10. So instead of spending more time picking up my medicine, I spend more time picking up my grandkids.
Hi, Grandma.
The Walmart Pharmacy Prescription Program includes hundreds of popular medicines. A 90-day supply of prescription drugs is now $10. A month's supply is still $4. Save money. Live better. Walmart. Restrictions apply. See Walmart.com or your pharmacist for details.
It's a common virus among toddlers that's seeing a dramatic decrease.
The CDC says they have seen a dramatic decrease in the number of rotavirus cases, and the cases they are seeing are less severe. The CDC's Dr. Daniel Payne.
We are a bit surprised. It's very good news. This is a disease that is quite often severe and is very common in infants.
And what's behind the decrease?
Well, we believe right now that it may be because of a dramatic increase in vaccine coverage.
A new vaccine for infants was introduced last year. Sabrina Gibbons for CBS News, Atlanta.
Those 11 outward-bound hikers in California's Fresno County missing since Sunday. Found.
Everybody's in good shape.
Chris Curtis, Fresno County Sheriff's Office.
We've located the missing hikers. Apparently, the executive director of Outward Bound had received a sat phone call from one of the group saying they were safe and sound at a small store in the Florence Lake area of eastern Fresno County.
I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
There's a reason you come to Sherwin-Williams. You just expect more from us. Better paint, better advice, a better way to realize your vision.
At your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store, we have exceptional products and unparalleled expertise because painting and decorating is all we do. And now save up to 20% on a wide variety of paints and stains. Stop in. You'll be amazed what happens when you ask.
At Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
I have high cholesterol. Now I'm eating well and staying active. Guess what? Walmart is doing their part to lower my numbers, too. I can get up to a 3-month supply of my prescription for just $10. So instead of spending more time picking up my medicine, I spend more time picking up my grandkids.
Hi, Grandma.
The Walmart Pharmacy Prescription Program includes hundreds of popular medicines. A 90-day supply of prescription drugs is now $10. A month's supply is still $4. Save money. Live better. Walmart. Restrictions apply. See Walmart.com or your pharmacist for details.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course, it's the unpredictable Peter V. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter V's America.
Welcome to the Free Speech Zone on the Peter V. Collins Show. Welcome your phone calls this hour in the Free Speech Zone. My toll-free number is the same as usual, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can talk about any subject, offer any viewpoint, and call from anywhere within the sound of my voice. That's what passes for rules here on the Peter B. Collins Show. A little little bit later this hour, we're going to check in with Chris Tonsing in Washington at the Middle East Report. There is a group that has been meeting and advocating for a withdrawal from Iraq, and they have a plan. We'll talk about that a little bit later this hour. In the meantime, you're welcome to call in, 888-573-8372. Up first, Holly is checking in from Castroville, which is the world's leader in production of artichokes.
Yes.
Hello, Holly. How are you doing? Is it true that you have hot and cold running water and melted butter on your kitchen sink?
Well, not on mine, but maybe somebody else's.
Yeah. Actually, I like a little mayonnaise with my artichoke.
Yes, that just goes well.
Yeah. So what's on your mind today, Holly?
Well, I was concerned. I've heard a lot talked about, you know, they're stopping the spraying for the light brown apple moth. And we are out in rural North County of Monterey,
right,
in the Elkhorn Slough area. And I'm just curious, when they say rural areas, the only areas that are going to be sprayed, I don't know what they're going to be using as a criteria for populated, non-populated areas. So my question was going to be to the Lieutenant Governor, what do they actually propose as far as who is populated and not populated? Because I have actually heard and read somewhere that the only harm that actually is done to the fruit by these moths is cosmetic. And I thought that was very interesting, that we're doing this all just because it makes the fruit look a little bit less attractive.
Well, you raise a couple of things. First of all, I just have to tell you, honestly, I don't know the answer to how they are defining what areas are considered agriculture and then can be sprayed from the air, and which are considered residential and therefore aerial spraying is not permitted. To your other point, I've heard conflicting reports, because I agree with you. What I've generally heard is that the apple moth will blemish the fruit or other product, and that it reduces the value. The other issue is that the U.S. Department of Agriculture can, and under certain circumstances, must impose a quarantine to try to prevent the LBAM from flying and, infesting other areas. And that quarantine, I think, actually has more of an economic impact than any other, which is to, it essentially would establish that products from certain zones in California would have to be tested and perhaps fumigated to ensure that the pest doesn't proliferate. But I am unconvinced about the depth of the risk, and also I'm unconvinced about the safety of the product they plan to spray.
Well, I'm also concerned about what kind of precedent this starts to where you can just, they're just all of a sudden given the opportunity to come and spray just because it's been told by the Agricultural Department that we are requiring this without any due process of whether or not it's going to impact, you know, the environment, other animals, and humans. And that really concerns me more than anything else, the fact that they came in here initially, and we're going to do it without our say or no say, basically.
Right, yeah. Now, it is alarming on a number of fronts. It's intrusive, and it's an open question as to whether it would be effective.
Yes.
And that, to me, is the risk-benefit analysis that we haven't seen objectively presented.
Well, again, that is really a concern because, again, they're coming in and telling us without really proving anything that we have to go through all this. And I thought that just very, again, like you say, intrusive and not very convincing as the way to go.
Holly, I believe you're a first-time caller to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, I am, as a matter of fact.
Can I reward you for your initiative?
Well, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
You have a DVD player?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Well, you hold on, and Joshua is going to take down your mailing address, and I'm going to send you a DVD copy of the film Uncounted about election slipperiness in these United States.
Well, let me tell you, I appreciate your program. We listen all the time, and we have friends that do so also, and it's just one of those things we just don't get time to call. So I was here today, so thank you very much.
Well, I'm glad you called. Hold on, and we'll get that DVD out in the mail to you within a week or six. I have to go to the post office sometime soon. By the way, if you want a Vincent Bugliosi book, and what else do I have? Oh, the talk radio book by Rory O'Connor. Those haven't been mailed yet. Maybe tomorrow. We'll see. Dan in Carmel Valley, thanks for calling the PBC Show.
Thank you, Peter. Hi.
Hi.
As someone who is calling from the undisclosed location that my sister calls Vertical Acres, and I can hear aircraft working on the Basin Fire, and I can hear aircraft working on the Indians Fire. I've been paying pretty good attention to both of them, and so I can kind of clear up a couple of acreage questions if you'd like.
All right, go ahead.
And
so the Basin Complex Fire, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, is about 7,000 acres as of Monday.
It is incorrect. There's the Bear Basin Fire was about that. And it has merged with the Gallery Fire, which is much bigger and moving faster. Today they merged, and they are together. They're about 19,000 acres, and the Indians Fire has burned about more than 80 square miles, which is more than 85,000 acres. And when Arnold came, I don't know if there's any connection, and I am with you on that, your comments earlier about that kind of politician mm-hmm. showing up thing. I suspect that usually. But they upgraded the priority of the Basin Fire Complex, and I'm very appreciative of that, being kind of pinched between two fires. There's a lot of action. I can hear it and smell it. And mm-hmm. It's quite thrilling.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because that's why I didn't go off, at least I didn't think I did go off too hard on the governor, because there is a role for him to play, to observe the situation and make command decisions. Now, often that data can be transmitted to him from the fire chiefs and other leaders in the field, and he doesn't necessarily have to be there, but there's no doubt that his personal observation of the devastation there and to see it firsthand could motivate him to take the kind of steps that you just described.
I think that may be what happened, because resources are spread so thin. There's so many fires, so I feel for everybody that's in jeopardy, and we really should, you know, people who live in the woods, we really should build out of fireproof materials and do some clearing and all that. And that's the way it is in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm really grateful for the people that are working so hard right now. And I know a lot of them personally. So,
all right, well, go take them some Twinkies or something.
All right.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Good to hear from Dan in Carmel Valley today. In response to our earlier guest, Susan Mulcahy, in the book Why I'm a Democrat, Bill from Cleveland checks in with an email. Hi, Peter. I remain a Democrat so I can vote in the primaries to effect change from within and to help elect better Democrats. This is the essence of what those who defend the Dems blindly always say. Yet nothing changes. The corporatocracy rolls on, aided and abetted by the Dems. The defenders of the Dems simply roll their eyes whenever a Dem does bad and blindly pull the lever for the next Dem corporate candidates. That's with K's. No questions asked. What the Dems have shown is that they cannot or will not stand up to the worst president in history and have gone along to get along while being rolled by the administration and the GOP blind faithful. They can't even stand up for the Constitution, the new FISA bill, and impeachment. Very well put. Thank you, Bill. He calls himself Bill O'Rights Man. We go to Heather in Monterey next. Heather, thanks for calling the PBC show.
Thank you.
Tell me what's on your mind.
Well, I was curious to ask you if you have ever heard of eugenics.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us a little more about that?
Well, I'm not really an expert on it, so I don't really want to offer you a lecture. Did you have a specific question about eugenics policies or what?
Well, as I understood it so far, taking into effect, you know, our required school reading of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, then later finding out that he's not, after all, a prophet, as I kind of wondered if he was, that his brother, as part of the eugenics, you know, grouping that were responsible for deciding that numbers of people would die so that some elite might live on, and that in one of these latest meetings, Mrs. Clinton was seen going in, things like that. I wondered, of course, if more people have ever heard about this and might want to educate themselves regarding that there is a plan of our governing forces to let people die, to help them die with pharmaceuticals,
mm-hmm.
the doping up of America, so we might not be so bright when this other, you know, horrible non-democratic, non-Christian, non-everything goes on, killing and occupying other countries, things like that.
So, for example, in your view, do you include assisted suicide under the term eugenics?
No, I don't believe that's part of it. I thought that eugenics was based on a plan that had been formulated for coaching. Well, I guess what you're saying with pharmaceuticals, that is an effect, a side effect that they're certainly not concerned with.
Mm-hmm.
That might lead into why our military is now handing out these dope pills to, keep them in that front line, and at the same time, cause it very difficult to keep living.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, because I really haven't focused on this whole set of issues recently. Mm-hmm. Is there somebody who you've read or who you've heard speak about this who you think would make an interesting guest on the show?
Alex Jones.
Alex Jones, okay. All right. Well, I'll take a look at that and see what we can come up with, all right?
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for the call today. We're going to take a break and return here on the Peter B. Collins Show. 888-5. Peter B. is my toll-free number. There's room for you in the free speech zone. Straight ahead, there's more on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Hello. I'm Alan Mello with Monterey Business Brokers. As a business broker, I market my clients' businesses proactively, handling all aspects of the sales process, and I assist buyers to find the right fit to meet their financial needs and lifestyle. My extensive experience in sales and marketing, including owning a full-service ad agency, guide my approach to marketing your business. Rather than listing everything I can find, I seek quality businesses with good value. Then I design a confidential custom marketing plan and take the time and resources necessary to present your business in the very best light, professionally packaged to the right audience. A 2007 Entrepreneur Magazine survey concluded that business owners who used the services of a business broker got on average a 20% higher price for their businesses than those that went it alone. If you're ready to buy or sell a business, I'd like to work for you. Give me a call at 917-3511. I'm Alan Mello with Monterey Business Brokers. Let's make your best deal happen. Call me at 917-3511.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin.
The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked.
Professor David Ray Griffin, author of A New Pearl Harbor, will disclose the truth behind September 11th, Saturday, June 28th at 7 p.m., Church of Religious Science, corner of Franklin and Pacific in Monterey. For information, call 375-2016.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor authentic Chinese dishes like congee and juk at Jim's Restaurant, 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Checking traffic on KRXA, and we do have a new accident coming in for Santa Cruz southbound 1 at 17. Two cars, and they're both off to the right-hand shoulder. CHP not yet on the scene. Look for heavy traffic as you approach the area. It'll stay stop and go down into Aptos right now. We've also had reports of heavy traffic leaving South San Jose down into Morgan Hill. This because of some Caltrans pothole filling work in the right lane, South 101 at Cochran Road, and that does have you backed up all the way to Bailey Avenue. Highway 68, we've had no problems so far this afternoon. 17 Santa Cruz Mountains currently checking in, stalling accident-free. And this is brought to you by Gold Bond Foot Cream for softer, healthier feet this summer. Get Gold Bond Foot Cream with 7 intensive moisturizers plus soothing vitamins that work as hard as your feet. Get Gold Bond Foot Cream. Now, if you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix with traffic on KRXA.
Time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. 28 states across the country are continuing their abstinence-only programs.
Oh, baby, looking at you tonight. There's something I'd like to do tonight. And I believe in abstinence only, but I don't want to leave you lonely, so abstain with me, baby.
Oh, baby.
All night long. Come over and refrain with me, baby. All night long. I'm gonna wanna jump your bones. I'm gonna have to dump that Jones. So come on now, get strong in lover's lane with me. Abstain with me.
A lot of people don't remember that the abstinence-only program was a component of Bill Clinton's welfare reform from 1996. Remember that? Well, a lot of times this is blamed on the evangelicals associated with George W. Bush. But yeah, the abstinence training programs went into effect under Bill Clinton's signature. And now what we've seen is that the pregnancy rate among abstinent-only kids is about the same as the pregnancy rate among others. And so it is a flop. It's ridiculous. But 28 states will continue to spend your federal taxpayer dollars on meaningless abstinence-only programs. And what about Gloucester, Massachusetts? Got a wave of high school pregnancies there. And apparently the abstinence-only program just didn't quite kick in Gloucester, Mass. Andy's on the line from NYC. Hello, Andy.
Hi, how you doing, Peter?
I'm abstinent. I'm not. I'm doing fine.
It's a pretty amazing story in Gloucester where the principal denied or had some kind of mental lapse.
Well, the principal is the one who initially said that he thought there was a pact among these pregnant teenage girls, and now the mayor has come out and said, well, he was kind of fuzzy on that.
I don't know. And he couldn't get on the podium with the mayor and back up that story, or they wanted to keep him out of the limelight.
Well, they've asked him to abstain from further comment.
Bizarre story.
Yeah.
I called concerning Tim Russert, since your moratorium is off.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I just want to say, when Tim Russert got a hold of a progressive, be it Kucinich, Edwards, or Howard Dean, it's like the incisors in his mouth just went out, and he turned into a wolf. Now, he would just be all over a progressive Democrat and just tear into them. And with Howard Dean, he would treat Howard Dean with complete, unadulterated disrespect. And when it came to issues, I mean, like you brought up before earlier, with Kucinich, it was UFOs. With Obama, which he really isn't a progressive per se, But he had it out for a month. It was Farrakhan over and over again,
right,
being endorsed by.
Yeah.
Where it was Reverend, they, Media Matters said, on 8 out of 10 shows, he talked about Reverend Wright in regards to Obama and mentioned Reverend Wright's name 62 times.
And how many times did he mention McCain's pastors?
Zero.
Yeah.
Hagee, zero times. I mean, this guy was just a pure fill-in for the corporatocracy to just kind of, you know, obfuscate, distort, and throw out propaganda, you know, in the proverbial media echo chamber.
Right.
I mean, he was the number one echo, and Cheney and Bush knew that, that you got on his show, the Sunday morning show. You got on there, and you could get that echo chamber going, and
well,
that's what he was used for.
Yeah, in the fall of 2002, when they got Judy Miller to put the curveball BS in the New York Times, then Dick Cheney went on with Tim Russert, citing the New York Times, and the loop was complete. And Russert was complicit. Yet, after his death, he is lionized as the greatest journalist of our time. And, frankly, I thought he was a yeoman. I don't think he was superior.
He wasn't even a journalist. He came from being a political hack. He,
right,
you know, worked on political campaigns.
Andy, got to go to a break. Thanks for your call today. Great to have you listening. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffee-topia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
Cornerstone Wellness Center in Monterey specializes in reducing stress and pain naturally for you, your children, and even your pets. With 8 professionals, techniques like quantum biofeedback, homeopathy, infrared and ozone steam saunas, and lymphatic drainage are used to help rid your body of toxins, which can cause disease. I'm Sheila Gale, and I've lived with chronic pain for years. Trina Hammack uses state-of-the-art quantum biofeedback and Rolf structural integration. I feel better physically and mentally. Cornerstone also offers ionic foot baths, massage, organic microcurrent facials, and the latest in body strengthening and corrective exercise specifically designed for your body so you'll start living pain-free. Tired of taking medicines? Cornerstone uses homeopathy and top-of-the-line essential oils. Finally, an alternative that really works is here for your entire family. Cornerstone Wellness Center at 1088 Cass Street in Monterey. Call 373-6204. 373-6204.
Hello, this is
Solazar.
Hi, I'm Carolani.
Join us this Sunday at 6 p.m. for Good Vibrations, Tools for Transformation.
Together, we'll transform your relationships, communication, health, and the ability to reach your goals and dreams.
Good Vibrations, Sunday at 6 p.m. on AM 540 KRXA.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
A quick update from last hour when I was talking with Lieutenant Governor Garamendi. It turns out that it's not true that next week, July 1, that the fine for a violation in the carpool or diamond lane jumps up to $1,000. I got an email, and I believed it. Don't always believe your email.
Hey, what do you say? What do you say? Is it time to bring the troops home from Iraq?
I can't take it no more.
Sunday's New York Times, Frank Rich got it right. If the surge is working, can we please bring our troops home? Joining me now is Chris Tonsing from the Middle East Report. Chris, welcome back to the PBC show.
Thanks a lot, Peter. How are you doing?
Not too bad, and I'm encouraged by the work that you and others are doing. You are one of the organizers of the Task Force for a Responsible Withdrawal from Iraq. And it's really important to have some honest, rational discussion about these issues because we've been kind of ping-ponging back and forth from the extreme of the Bush administration, which essentially is whether we're up or down today, we can't leave. It'll be a debacle, there'll be a bloodbath, etc. And there are some dreamers on the left as well who say, oh, let's just pull out and we can do it in, you know, somewhere between 6 weeks and 6 months. And we have engaged in an occupation there, and you can't just pull out overnight. I understand that. And what I want to see is movement toward that ultimate goal. And tell us a little bit about the task force, how this has been organized, and what your process is, Chris.
Sure. Well, the task force was formed in early this year at the request, actually, of Representative Jim McGovern from Massachusetts. And he requested some Massachusetts peace activists to get together a bunch of Middle East and foreign policy experts to help him answer the question that has bedeviled many congressional Democratic opponents of the war, namely what you stated in your preamble, that if the U.S. were to withdraw its troops from Iraq, that automatically there would follow a bloodbath and regional chaos, perhaps endemic regional warfare, and a humanitarian crisis in Iraq that would dwarf what we have seen to date. So Representative McGovern wanted to get a feel for the best thinking among the experts who are out there about what the United States and the international community could do in the context of withdrawal to lessen the risks of those horrible scenarios coming to pass. So the task force convened on that basis, and we have today, actually, in a telephone press briefing earlier today, we formally launched our report, which is based on a workshop that we held at Harvard University in March, in which we convened about 15 top Middle East and Iraq experts to talk about this question of what can be done to reduce the risks of chaos and worse if the U.S. the President of the United States makes a decision to withdraw our troops and private contractors from Iraq.
And I'll just briefly mention some of the individuals and organizations affiliated with this effort. Jessica von Felbert from the Project on Defense Alternatives, Carl Canetta from the same group. He's been on our program before. Bill Frelick from Human Rights Watch, Raed Jarar, an actual Iraqi, affiliated now with the American Friends Service Committee. He also worked with Global Exchange based in San Francisco for a few years. Brian Katulis from the Center for American Progress. He and Lawrence Korb have written a number of white papers advocating and showing maps, mapping out how we can redeploy and move our troops out of Iraq. Also included, Nir Rosen from New York University, highly regarded, and Trita Parsi, a former congressional consultant and now head of the National Iranian American Council. So it's an interesting group of people. And I'm curious, Chris, are you in any way connected to Darcy Berner, who is a candidate for Congress from Washington State near the Seattle area, because she has authored a document that she calls the Responsible Plan for Leaving Iraq?
Right. That document came out as we were preparing our report when we applaud it and we're pleased that it came out, but no, our efforts are separate.
Okay, great. So we know pretty much what the situation is, and let me start off with some structural issues, because there's been a lot of discussion on this program and elsewhere recently about the negotiations underway between the United States and the government, the Maliki government in Baghdad, regarding SOFA, Status of Forces Agreement. And there's a lot of concern that this is a way for the Bush administration to tie the hands of the next president and leave us committed in Iraq for a lengthy period of time. Now, the UN mandate for the occupation of Iraq will expire at the end of this year. And your group is proposing that we have a limited renewal of the UN mandate and not go for this bilateral accord called a Status of Forces Agreement.
For precisely the reason that you mentioned, which is that this would not be a normal status of forces agreement. Rather, it would be what one of our participants, Caleb Rossiter, who works for Representative Bill Delahunt, calls a status of forces agreement on steroids. It would, by all reports, commit the next president, not just President Bush, to keeping U.S. troops in substantial numbers in Iraq well into the next presidency, irrespective of the wishes of the American people and irrespective of the wishes of the Iraqi people. We feel that such an agreement would be concluded undemocratically if it is concluded in both the United States and Iraq, and we feel that we should be talking about how to get our troops out of Iraq in the first place. So yes, we think that one of our that's the starting point, actually, of our report, is that negotiations on this bilateral agreement should cease, and rather we should renew the current UN mandate for a very brief period until such time as we can negotiate on the UN Security Council a new UN mandate, which would be predicated upon a timetable for U.S. withdrawal and would invest in the UN a greatly expanded portfolio of security, political, and humanitarian and economic responsibilities.
But Chris, how are we going to get our oil out if the UN's in charge?
Certainly our report envisions a U.S. government with a radically altered set of priorities.
Yes, indeed. Now, one of the other issues here is that we have this phony coalition. It really is the United States that is occupying Iraq, and the participation of other nations has dribbled down to a point that it's meaningless. I believe that we have to have a new coalition where the U.S. is at best a minority player, and that we need to populate the occupation of Iraq with Muslims, with Arabs, and not with Christians and Americans.
I think you're absolutely right. The United States is never going to secure the cooperation of the international community, whether it's European nations or nations in the Arab and Muslim world, including Iraq's neighbors, in trying to achieve peace and stability in Iraq, as long as the United States is in the driver's seat. And that's simply a political reality that flows from the fact that this war was opposed by nearly every Asian nation in the world, including some of our top European allies and the UN Security Council. In order for the United States to secure cooperation from the international community in trying to get out of Iraq, the United States essentially needs to eat crow. We need to say to our allies in the world that the invasion of Iraq was a mistake, and our decision to withdraw from Iraq will, in essence, be an admission of a historical error, mm-hmm. and that we are coming to them hand in hand to ask for their help in the final analysis, every country in the world has an interest in seeing, which is, if not a perfect democracy in Iraq, at least a much more peaceful Iraq that will not be an exporter of instability to other countries in this very strategic region.
Now, one of the bullet points here in the executive summary, Chris Tonsing, is that your group is advocating that we signal that all of Iraq's neighbors, including Syria and Iran, will henceforth be treated as partners in promoting stability. Now, this is something that I support. I do believe that we need to engage the neighbors. But we've created such a mess there with a Shiite-dominated government in Baghdad that is closely allied with Shiites who are not Arabs in Iran. And we compound the situation further with our saber-rattling toward Iran and the support of Israel's attack on that Syrian facility that may or may have not have been a nuclear facility last September. So I'm curious if you think there is a path forward where the United States, and I accept that there's a lot of crow that has to be consumed, but haven't we poisoned relations with Syria and Iran to the extent that it's hard to imagine them wanting to offer any relief to the United States in terms of the future of Iraq?
Those countries certainly will not help us out in Iraq as long as our attitude toward them is belligerent. If the United States changes its orientation towards those two countries and moves to restore diplomatic relations with Syria, send our ambassador back to Damascus, and also engages Iran in a real way for the first time since 1979 on the outstanding bilateral issues between these two our two countries, there may be a chance of getting those two countries, and particularly Iran is the most important, behind a reinvigorated diplomatic process that would help us help the United States get out of Iraq and leave behind a chaotic mess there.
So would you look to Iran's trading partners like France, Germany, Russia to broker deals for the United States?
Certainly European countries who have closer contacts with Tehran could be very helpful in this process, yes. But I think it's pretty clear that Iran, even the current government with its, shall we say, colorful president, what they're after in the big picture is acceptance by the international community, acceptance of the Islamic Republic of Iran as a quote-unquote normal government like any other government in the world. And the obstacle to their recognition as such historically has been the United States. The United States changes that posture, which has been shared by Democratic and Republican administrations alike and has just taken a very extreme form under the administration of George W. Bush, yes, I do think that even the current Iranian government would engage the United States in serious and meaningful talks.
Okay. We're going to take a break and return. Chris Tonsing is our guest. You can visit his website at the Middle East Report, M-E-R-I-P, MERIP.org. And we're talking about the Task Force for a Responsible Withdrawal from Iraq. More in a moment. We'll talk about reconstruction, repatriating refugees, and a pesky timetable for withdrawal. If you have a question or comment, bring it on now. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. You can share a podcast with any part of the show, with a friend or loved one or total stranger. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Checking traffic for the final time this evening on KRXA. We'll start you off in San Benito County, South 101 at Bettabel Road. A couple of dogs running around the center of I-CHP, concerned they could cause a crash, so they're headed out there with animal control. For Santa Cruz, Southbound 1 at 17, an accident. Two cars in the final clearing stages off to the shoulder. CHP has been there to take a report. Look for heavy traffic approaching the area. Staying stop and go down into the Aptos area right now. Highway 17 itself, as you make your way through the Santa Cruz Mountains, we have no stalls and no accidents to tell you about. And earlier problems in Morgan Hill, South 101 before Cochrane Road. We had reports of Caltrans filling potholes in the right-hand lane, and then had you backed up all the way to Bailey Avenue in South San Jose. This is brought to you by Ace Hardware. Shop the grand opening sale at your neighborhood Ace Hardware. Find expert help, friendly advice, and great deals. Hurry in. The sale is Friday through Sunday at Ace, the helpful place. Have a great night. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
In front of the hour, time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking with Chris Tonsing, and he is one of the organizers of a group that has put together a plan. It's called Report of the Task Force for a Responsible Withdrawal from Iraq, and it's been published here publicly today. And Chris, is there a website where people can read this for themselves?
Yeah, it's on the website of the Commonwealth Institute in Cambridge, Mass, and the URL for that organization is comw.org.
comw.org.
COMW.org. Okay.
Yes.
Now, this whole debate over setting timetables has been very contentious. And last week, as the Democrats continue to aid and abet the occupation and provided money even more and longer term than the administration asked for, it's very frustrating to many of us that there are no conditions placed on this funding. And the timetables were derided as cut and run, as a timetable for defeat, and those sorts of things. But fundamentally, the U.S. has to face that we will leave Iraq at some point. And whether it's next year or, you know, 90 years from now, as McCain didn't really say, but that's what he stuck with, you know, my belief is that we have to take some risks. And that we have to, you know, leave the best prospects that we can, but we cannot, you know, leave this umbilical cord attached permanently, neither on the cost basis or the humanitarian level. So how do we persuade the American public to embrace timelines for redeployment or withdrawal from Iraq, Chris?
Well, I think the American public is largely persuaded of the need for such, you know, for such a definite change in policy. I think it's policymakers in Washington who are not quite persuaded. And that is the chief goal of this report, is to speak to this concern that if there would be a timetable announced, that would embolden our enemies in Iraq, that would sell out our friends in Iraq, that would lead to even worse consequences than that. And, you know, so, you know, we are proposing a reinvigorated national reconciliation process under the aegis of the United Nations. We're proposing reinvigorated regional diplomacy, also under the aegis of the United Nations, as ways, yes, full of potential pitfalls, full of potential risks, but also ways that paths that have not been taken in the course of this war things that have as the best chance of anything that we can think of actually resolving the structural crises that underlie the civil conflict in Iraq that has taken so many lives in the last 2 years. This is the key question that the report is seeking to address, and we think it's the most comprehensive set of recommendations that's been come up with so far. Although it's not far from what some very, very, you know, establishment groups like the Iraq Study Group have come up with in the past.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that has troubled me, Chris, is over the last few months we've heard a more chorus of voices from Washington saying, well, it's the Iraqis' problem. And they should be paying for reconstruction out of their huge oil profits. Well, I don't think the profits are so huge. And I think we have a moral obligation to do everything we can to repair the infrastructure, to get the lights back on and the air conditioning running 24/7, to provide for clean drinking water and sanitary sewage disposal. And I think that we really owe it to them to rebuild the infrastructure that was there under Saddam Hussein, because it wasn't that bad. It was a pretty high standard of living for that region in the world and a very high education level. So how do we address this, and how do we dampen down these voices who now want to kind of ignore all the damage we've caused and just say, oh, I don't want to pay for it?
Right. Well, there's a lot of hostility in Congress, especially among Democrats, toward the Maliki government, the sort of rump government in the Green Zone. And that's for good reason. The Maliki government is basically a collection of communal parties that has not shown that it can pursue policies of national unity. And it's been quite incompetent and feckless in trying to actually provide government services, and it's been feckless in spending the money that is at its disposal. But what needs to change in our thinking about these billions of dollars of oil money that are in Iraqi government accounts is that this money does not belong to the politicians of the Maliki government. It belongs to the Iraqi people. It's the patrimony of the Iraqi people, and it should be held in escrow, essentially, for what a future Iraqi government that hopefully will be more representative chooses to spend on for the long-term health and welfare of the Iraqi people. It is immoral, I entirely agree with you, to ask the Iraqi people to pay for their own bombing, their own displacement, the degradation of their own infrastructure through wars that were launched by a dictator that they never chose, or their invasion by a power 3,000 miles away.
Well, and Chris, we also shouldn't foist American contractors on them. Bechtel went in there and squandered a lot of money, rebuilt very little, and they're not alone. There are other contractors that wouldn't hire Iraqis, wouldn't use local materials, and they squandered a lot of the money, they say, on security with Blackwater and Khaki and these other companies. So if we make the business of reconstruction a works progress administration for Iraqi citizens, we would strengthen the whole picture and get us and some of our war profiteering contractors out of the mix.
Yes, and this is another one of our key recommendations that in a post-reconciliation Iraq, it will be possible to envision the creation of an Iraq Development Fund, again under the aegis of the UN Security Council, which the U.S. should contribute to heavily, along with other countries that have the means. And this a key part of this development fund should be a massive public works program that would be staffed entirely by Iraqis so as to address the problems of unemployment in the country.
Chris, I'm out of time, but I want to direct people again to comw.org, comw.org, and you can read this report for yourself. Thanks for your work, and I hope we get out of Iraq soon.
So do I.
All right, Chris Donsey.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, How Reverend Moon Created the Washington Times, Seduced the Religious Right, and Built an American Kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at thekingofamerica.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Two huge decisions from the Supreme Court today. One knocks down the death penalty for child rapists. CBS's Wyatt Andrews.
The ruling hits hardest in Louisiana, where two death row inmates, Patrick Kennedy and Richard Davis, both convicted of brutally raping young girls, will now likely get life sentences. Disappointed prosecutors there dispute the idea that child rape is not the worst of crimes.
Is it equal to, if not worse than, the depravity of someone who takes another human being's life?
In a powerful dissent, Justice Samuel Alito also argued that child rape is an executable offense. In the eyes of ordinary Americans, Alito wrote, predators who seek out defenseless young children are the epitome of moral depravity.
The other big decision from the high court today, the $2.5 billion awarded to victims of the Exxon Valdez oil spill, slashed by four-fifths. It comes to about $15,000 per plaintiff, like fisherman Ted Rayner.
That is not much for destroyed livelihoods, altered futures, and 14 years of litigation.
FBI Chief Robert Mueller announcing results of a nationwide crackdown on child prostitution.
Our efforts have led to the recovery of 433 child victims.
Fire and flood. In Northern California, more than 1,000 wildfires, now down to only 700. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Our resources have been spread thin. We've been asking Oregon, Arizona, and Washington
to help us with some additional water dropping helicopters and so on.
Along the swollen Mississippi, CBS's Cammy McCormick in Winfield, Missouri, where it's not over.
A tiny town which has worked so hard to protect itself is still waiting for the worst.
This was certainly something we weren't looking forward to.
Their levee buckling under the weight of so much water, sandbagging temporarily called off because they ran out of sand, and just about everyone's exhausted, County Spokesman Andy Binder.
Every day is a very unique challenge. We rise up to those challenges, but when you start seeing weather predictions at 37.5 and they're extending them out further, it takes its toll.
Still, he says they'll be out there reinforcing that levee on Saturday with all they've got. Cammy McCormick, CBS News, Winfield, Missouri.
CBS's Nancy Cordes on the Fed's announcement of no rate cuts.
For now, the Fed is banking on...